he'll be devastated, though.
Oh, well, that's pretty good story about that.
Legislator Litz, would you like to lead us in the
pledge
to the flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Clark Tierney, if you wouldn't mind doing a roll call for us?
Yes. Chair Petit.
Here.
Deputy Chair Fabiana said he couldn't make it. Legislator Litz.
Here.
Legislator Nolan.
Here.
Legislator Erner.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. I'd like to make a motion that we accept the minutes of the October 11th meeting as submitted.
Second.
Very good. Second. Any questions, comments? Okay, hearing none, I'll take the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Okay, so we'll take some out of order, even though, Nate, I see you were here. Resolution 337, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement with the city of Kingston, where the county is a subrecipient of the city's ARPA SLRF funds for Elizabeth Manor. Motion for, is there any action on that? Okay.
No.
So do we need a motion for...
It was postponed in economic development.
So I suggest we take no action.
Take no action. Okay. We'll have a second on that?
That would be an action.
All right. Okay, so we will take action.
Not even that.
And Director Doyle...
Hold on, me, Chair Petit.
Question.
I don't see that committee on here. Could we amend another committee that took no action or postponed?
No, you guys have been taking no action in this committee. It went to the floor, and then you guys sent it back to both Public Works and Ways and Means. Mm-hmm. So we're the only two committees that have been
reviewing
this, reviewing
it. We could defer. Is it in front of any other committee besides Public Works and Ways and Means?
No.
It would have went through the ARPA committee, I would assume.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a while ago. It went all the way to the floor. And then
but when we kick it back, we choose the committee.
Didn't you in our meeting say that the executive branch was asking to put this vote off for a month?
Oh, Health and Human Services. Okay.
Well, it's time to bring it back up.
We'll have time to discuss it when we have more information.
Yeah. Moving with resolution number 670, Director Doyle has an appointment at 7. So this resolution is on page 2, number 16. Resolution 670, authorizing the issuance of an operating permit to Catskill Mountain Railroad Company, Inc. for use of the eastern segment of the Ulster and Delaware Railroad Corridor for tourism railroad operations with revenues to exceed $50,000. Motion for discussion? Second, Erner.
And I have a question.
Sure.
By taking this out of order, I think there are potential interactions between resolution number 669 and this resolution. So...
This was in response to an RFP for a five-year contract.
So my concern is, and since we have a motion and a second, I'm going to make a comment. My concern is that if resolution 669 moves forward and is passed, that it would require a new RFP. So I'm not thrilled with the notion that we might pass on this resolution tonight and extend the permit and then in a short period of time reconsider and have to issue another RFP, might not even be to this vendor or might be to this vendor with different conditions. So I would be prepared if 669 is off the table to move forward with 670. Mm-hmm. But if 670 is addressed first, I'm going to be a no for those reasons.
Okay. I mean, I'm comfortable moving forward with it because there was an RFP you know, we, instead of holding off, it seems like we do that a lot. We hurry up and wait and postpone things. Well, I'm comfortable moving forward with it, but I can, we can defer to Director Doyle.
We could make another comment in response to mm-hmm. yours, which is perhaps we should discuss with perhaps we should discuss 669 first and then resolve that issue. If that motion is postponed, then I'm happy to vote on this. Mm-hmm. Just don't think the two can be voted on together. One has the implications for the other. So, would there be support for discussing 669 quickly first?
I would support that. I would move to table this and
legislatively.
This is a vote and a resolution with response to an RFP. It really has nothing to do with 669 because the RFP is to renew or a 5-year permit between the existing mile markers. And this RFP ends at 8.33.
I understand.
So whether 669 goes forward or reverse, the RFP only gives them the permit to 8.33.
All right. I would point out, though, that the seeker for 670 says that it is a neg deck because it is exactly the same language of permit that was addressed before, or not exactly the same, but substantially similar. And therefore, if we are we approve this, we certainly cannot adopt 669 without going through another seeker process, which we probably need for that anyway. But I think that it's the possibility of giving a 1-year permit if we are contemplating going out for a change in the policy and use of that corridor would make sense to me rather than a 5-year permit in this situation. And I don't know that we're obligated to issue a 5-year permit. We went out for an RFP and we can offer what we want to offer. So I think Resolution 669 is problematic in many ways. I would like for it to be removed, you know, from our consideration so that we can do our regular work, such as issue this permit in response to the RFP.
Legislator Maloney and then Liz.
Is 669 an extension of basically 670?
No.
Separate.
Completely separate.
It's 669 is revising, it's an amendment to the policy that was issued under 488. It's changing one of the sections in Resolution 488.
Okay, I'm just
so it's a policy change. It's doesn't have much to do with the RFP.
That's what I'm trying to get at. Okay.
So, will of the committee?
I mean, there was a motion on the floor. We can entertain the motion and a second, but I mean, I'm going to be a no on it. So, it's up to you.
Call the vote on 670.
Okay.
Is that what we're discussing? 670, correct?
Correct, yeah.
And that's for
it's
the RFP,
RFP that was
for
sent
the 5-year extension.
Right.
Okay.
I have some questions, though, before the call. So, Mr. Hunt is here representing this company, and I want to thank him for the discussions that we had around this and his operation of this attraction here in our county. And I had expressed to him privately, I'll just put on the record, my interest to see a cleaner locomotive in the future with this, and I'd love to know what the county's role might be in helping that happen, if that's something that we would be looking to be asked to pay for, or whether the business itself would do it, and like what our role might be. Well, we had discussed that a little bit, but probably the planning department would have something to do with it. And I'm also interested in the safety, the safety at the crossing in the city of Kingston, where there's a trail that's going to have a terminus at where the railroad crosses, and there's proposals to connect, to have the trail basically be a spot where people can get on the railroad. And I'm interested to know how the county is going to go to bat for the people of this county who are using that trail to make it safe to cross. I know we've discussed that before, but I think this is the time to work on that together, because we're working on safety enhancements for the railroad. The trail is right next to it. So let's hear how we're going to make that safe for the trail user, too.
Where is that exactly?
That's Washington Avenue in the city of Kingston.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Trail ends at a spot where there's like five lanes.
And the crossing you're talking about is crossing the rail or crossing Washington Avenue?
I'm talking about both crossings with Washington Avenue. So there's a railroad and improvement being made so that that's safer for the railroad to get through there. I want to know, since the railroad's going to interact, or it's proposed to interact with the trail that's now being finished there, how it's also going to be safe for the trail user to get across in a substantially similar place. And we've talked, like I said, we talked before. I haven't been heartened by what I've heard. I want to hear, no, we're actually going to make it safe to cross there. I want to hear that. I want to hear what we're going to do with DOT and the city and whoever else we need to work with and make that happen, if this connection is really going to be a thing.
Director Doyle?
So, a couple of things. One, with respect to the issue as it relates to cleaner motive power, the RFP did include a provision that a cleaner motive power locomotive would be preferred in terms of Tier 4. The response from CMRR in their proposal was that their existing locomotive power is not rated, and in further discussions they've indicated that these types of engines, even to move to a Tier 3, which is a rebuild of most of the existing other locomotives, would be extremely expensive and not something they were prepared to do. We did have some discussions about PFAT funds, which is basically a funding source that comes out from the state that has not been used. I can't remember whether they actually use them or not. But it's separate from the safety improvements that were done on Washington Avenue, and it requires the county to essentially ensure that service is maintained for 10 years, not 5 years. And when we issued the RFP, we indicated that the RFP could not respond to a section relative to the issue as it related to PFRAP funds, that the county was not prepared to support PFRAP funds. So that discussion with respect to CMRR occurred outside the RFP process. So the answer to your locomotive question is there's nothing in this RFP response nor the permit which would require the CMRR to move to a cleaner mode of power, with the understanding of the costs involved in that, in moving to that cleaner mode of power. With regard to one of the issues that Kathy Nolan raised, is that this RFP was issued with a specific provision that effectively it dealt with the areas that were in the existing permit and were part of the Resolution 488, and indicated that should there be a discussion of moving outside of this, that effectively it would invalidate the proposal. CMRR was careful not to respond in their response to the RFP not to include any materials associated with moving outside the permit area. But they have essentially provided additional information to the planning department and to the legislature about their ability to move out, particularly with respect to a lease agreement that's been apparently come into existence for a property adjacent to Basin Road. With regard to the crossing of Washington Avenue, the crossing of Washington Avenue is a safety grant that comes out, it's called a Section 130 grant, that's eligible to railroads. That came out that fixed the the existing crossing and put flags and gates associated with that. It is not connected in any way, shape, or form to the ending of the Kingston Rail Trail, which is now completed. So you can't conflate the two with respect to essentially the issuance of this permit and the work on Washington Avenue to make a safe crossing in that location.
Legislator Nolan.
I want to voice that I share the concerns that Legislator Erner is raising with the admissions from the use of the old engines. The old engines are exempt from regulations that modern railroad engines would be subject to. Mm. So initially I had thought that because the rail ride runs infrequently, that it was de minimis, that, you know, even though it was an old engine, it wasn't a big concern because they do run infrequently. One of the members of the Ulster County Trails Advisory Commission committee has done the calculations based on the emissions that have been studied in engines of that age, and even running infrequently, if the engines contribute substantially to regional air quality decline. And that's particularly of concern if we have other sources of ambient air problems, as we did during the wildfires in Canada. I'm not sure if there's any way under the permit as it's drafted whether we could ask for suspension of rail activities on those days. I don't believe that happened during those days previously. So that's ambient air quality. In terms of these engines, the studies that Steve Rice brought to the Trails Advisory Committee demonstrate that engines of this nature cause quite a great deal of air pollution in the locomotives, in the cars themselves. And that's particularly true in the cars closest to the engines. So the amount of pollution, air contaminants, is approximately equivalent to being in a room with a smoker. And I think that if we were going ahead and move forward on this permit, that we should consider asking the vendor either to have in the cars an air purifying system that is known to remove particulate matter and the fumes that come from these kinds of engines, or to post an advisory. The being in a room with a smoker for that period of time is mainly of concern for people with pre-existing conditions such as asthma or COPD. Young children also could have more of an impact even from a shortish duration ride, an hour or two. But it's unusual for Ulster County to have any activity that is indoor and equivalent to smoking. We do not allow smoking inside the buildings in county property or even within a fairly substantial radius of the building. So this is county property, the for-profit enterprise, and we're allowing them to operate under, you know, their constraints or their preferred way of operating, but it has these impacts, and up to this point we haven't really addressed them. I think it's time to address them publicly and, you know, come up with an effective way of addressing them.
Mm. But it wasn't in the RFP, so we'd be deviating from the RFP for this.
The RFP did actually have some provisions that address this. Could you elaborate through the chair to the director?
I'm sorry. My apologies, Chair. It did indicate a preference and an indication relative to that. There could be a simple change to the permit, which would add a requirement for a monitor, and we would get results from that monitor and see whether or not there is an in-car versus out-of-car response to that and a need for posting, particularly for those folks with asthma or some underlying condition. That would not be an unusual thing to do if there is a concern with respect to on-site air quality issues.
I would appreciate that. And what the director is referring to is there's a device called a spec monitor that you can obtain for a few hundred dollars that people who live near oil and gas infrastructure often will put in their homes to discern it when there is increased pollution, especially particulate.
So did we close down all of our county infrastructure when the wildfires were there and the air quality was poor? Or put up notices or anything?
The notices from the public health services and the regional air folks were to stay inside in air conditioning.
Without any actual signage, so.
Was
our infrastructure closed down as well, or was it all open?
I don't know the answer to that question because I don't know what all our infrastructure did. Mm-hmm. I do know that all of the public was notified through all of the usual public health emergency channels, basically, that this was, you know, it's equivalent to a storm advisory or something of that nature. So, yes, I think that the people in these offices were under the public health instruction not to exercise outside, for example. Now, those riding the rail ride would not be exercising, but because they would be exposed to the wildfire pollution and to whatever pollution is generated from the engines, they would have the same type of increased risk as somebody who went out and exercised in that circumstance, in my opinion. So I think that the idea of putting monitors in each of the cars that are enclosed cars, you know, open air cars would not need that kind of monitoring, would give us data about these particular engines and what we should do about it.
Did we put monitors in the houses in Glen Street when we were doing the demo up at the jail? I'm pretty sure there was probably some air quality concerns there. Human beings have been riding trains for hundreds of years. The idea that we're going to start going into private companies and putting warnings and, I feel like we're giving the railroad here some scrutiny we don't give a lot of other areas in county government. If you want to throw a monitor in there, go ahead. I feel like this is just, to be honest, a roundabout way to fight the Catskill Mountain Railroad. We just find reasons to fight them. When you look up rail versus, the idea that, how many dump trucks we have flying around this county on a daily basis and how much more emissions they're putting into the air than this railroad. I've taken my kids on. Everything I've heard here today still gives me no pause to take my children and my family onto this Catskill Mountain Railroad, which I do every year. So,
what we did in the past with other things, I can't fix if other people didn't raise these concerns, and they should have been raised. I think they should have been raised. But in terms of a private business, we're not going out and monitoring private businesses. This is a business that is coming to us and asking for the privilege of using many miles, lots of square acres of what is a linear park. And we don't allow smoking in any of our parks. So I think that we are being consistent with our own rules here, and that we should not excuse an activity simply because they have difficulty complying. I think we can try to accommodate that. But the reason we have a no smoking policy is to protect the health of the people who work in this building and who live in the county and have to come here. For us to, when we had a musical group that wanted to come to Ulster County and use our fairgrounds to perform music, we did not allow them to display Confederate symbols. I think this is somewhat similar. It is our statement as a county that we care about air pollution, that we care about the health of people using our facilities. And by extension, when we bring a permit to this for-profit company and say, yes, it's okay for you to do that, I'm personally uncomfortable with saying it's okay for you to run an activity. You know, if you were doing a bouncy house and you had somebody smoking in it, we would immediately say, no, you can't do that. It's because it's kind of associated with the old-timey trains that we are, you know, tempted to let it go. And we have let it go. I mean, this is a company that's, you know, had permits for decades, and it just hasn't been fixed. And to say that there's, you know, we need a federal grant to fix it, that would be nice if that could happen, but the corporation is, you know, responsible for bringing its own facilities, its own equipment, up to standards that don't harm people. I don't think that's a controversial position.
But
there's
also problems getting funding because we've only provided 1 year extensions too. So the 5 year will substantially change that.
They need 10 years, according to what Director Doyle has said and provided us in information. And to do that, we would have to go through a mechanism such as used to happen with the IDA and make special exemptions again for this for-profit business. There are many people at this table who don't think we should do that for any business, but somehow this business is getting the special exemption, not from, I don't think I'm bringing anything special. I think the special exemption is coming from those who are trying to help this business do things that other businesses are not allowed to do.
I'm not quite sure what...
People are drinking alcohol right now across the street on county-owned property. I'm not sure if they're smoking or not, but we're not concerned about that.
In the parking lot is the county-owned property?
Yeah. Santa Fe.
Santa Fe, they're outdoor. We own that. I don't know if you know that. You've never asked a question about it, but...
I just said it's outdoors. It's not indoors. I know all about Santa Fe.
Legislator Litz and then Legislator Green.
No, I was just going to say that I don't know if they allow smoking inside the train. I mean, it's a public entity, and it is county property. But essentially what's being said here is because the train smokes, it's not allowed on county property.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of trucks, cars, and other things that emit emissions that operate on county property. So are we going to create a policy whereby no entity or vehicle that emits any pollution will be allowed on county property?
That's a good point. Legislator Green and then Legislator Nolan.
Well, first of all, I want to say that I agree with Legislator Nolan's concerns. I have a healthcare background, but I think it can be addressed. And I think it's wise to have it be addressed. But I don't think that should be a reason not to move forward. And I would welcome that discussion in energy, environment, and sustainability to create a plan. My vision, and has been for a while, is that ultimately the railroad would go solar and maybe have kind of a safe demonstration of the smoke, but not be either burning fossil fuel or creating those emissions. But I see it as such an important asset to that region and to the county that when there are obstacles, let's put our collective thinking to solving them, and I expect that the railroad would be amenable to that, and there are absolutely, you know, this is maybe a dream solar with artificial smoke that wouldn't hurt anybody or the environment, but somewhere in between, and I do think starting with monitoring is absolutely appropriate. And I also think that if it is necessary to put air filters in, I would support that. But let's figure out how to make it safe without detracting from the value that the railroad and its potential especially with this extension. So that's my two cents. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think the compromise is to monitor and to provide air filters and a notice if we can't get the air quality to something satisfactory. I do think that this is consistent that with what we are doing with the county's property. We are spending millions of dollars to take our vehicles from fossil fuels to green vehicles. Millions, millions of dollars. And that is all because of a commitment to running in the way that I'm saying that this business that is seeking permission to run on our property should run. So this is not unusual. It's where we're going with our county policies overall, and this is trying to bring this particular vendor into compliance or closer to compliance, acknowledging that the oldest engines just are the worst emissions.
So I just wanted to say when I talked about this, one of the things I wanted to just clear up the idea of essentially looking to go to a cleaner locomotive was based on regional air quality concerns. And the idea of essentially thinking about what individual air quality concerns are adjacent to the facility seems to me that we don't know if we have a problem, and monitoring would be basically say we either do or do not have a problem, then we could respond accordingly. And that's not an unusual position to be in, and I would imagine that the railroad wouldn't have any issues with essentially monitoring to make sure that we don't have a problem or we do have a problem and then respond accordingly. And that would be the thought, you know, if we're going to amend the permit to do that. And it's a simple amendment. There's a section in the permit that deals with environmental issues. We would just add that into a monitoring requirement for air quality.
And so what is the process we would need to take? Do we have to direct you to do that, or is that just within the operational aspect of the permit?
So I'm comfortable with whatever the committee wants to do, but clearly from my perspective, it's not a difficult amendment, and we would work out a situation in terms of how those, because we'd have a monitoring and then we'd have a reporting requirement associated with it, and we'd either determine if there is a problem or isn't. If there's not a problem, then we would discuss internally with the operator in terms of what the solutions are. We'd be looking for solutions if we needed them. Maybe we don't.
Yeah. So I'd like to make a motion that the permit be amended to include provisions for monitoring as suggested by the Director of Planning.
I'll second that.
All right, I'll call the vote.
For the amendment.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. So if there's no other discussion, I'd like to call the vote on this resolution. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Opposed.
Well, no.
For the reasons stated.
Okay. Thank you.
The vote is what, 3-1?
3-1. Next, the number 17, resolution number 671, authorizing the issuance of an operating permit to Rail Explorers Corporation for use of the western segment of the Ulster and Delaware Rail Corridor for tourism rail bike operations. Motion.
Move it.
Second. Any discussion?
I'd just like to say that the planning department, especially Director Doyle, have gone to great lengths to address the concerns of residents who live near a certain section of the Rail Explorers route. Mm-hmm. The Rail Explorers has changed wheels on their bikes, and they have put down a substance that substantially reduces the noise from the wheels. Those efforts and some continuing monitoring of sound disturbance. I just appreciate the planning department having really taken all those concerns seriously and addressed them, I think successfully.
Yes, Legislator Mullen.
What's the latest they're allowed to run?
The time frames are the same relative to the across the Route 28 corridor. Coming out of the station, those time frames haven't changed, but we've asked them to provide a situation that they can document that they're back across the Route 28 corridor prior to sunset.
That was the second biggest issue besides the sound. The rubber has helped some on that. We'll see how how long the rubber lasts. But the second biggest issue, as I would hear from all the neighbors over there, was the timing, and they were really hoping for some tweaks to the especially the late run, and we didn't give that to them.
Director Doyle, and
I just want to say that I think the Director Doyle just said that that was addressed.
Did you say the last one across was 8?
So the thought being was that one of the things we were concerned about, so it was more of a public safety issue in terms of trying to cross Route 28 at night or when it's dark. So we had it in the the existing permit, requires them to leave the station no later than 6:30. There is now in this permit a section that deals with when the last car crosses 28 going back to the station, that has to take place before sunset, and we want to look at their schedules to make sure that they can do that. They've indicated that they can. Mm-hmm. They've also indicated that the way they run their schedules, there is some changes in terms of when they run late nights and when they don't run late nights, so they only run the late nights. I believe, don't quote me on this, but there is a schedule in their response relative to when they run late nights. I would also add that one of the things that that's in this, and we sort of nailed down in terms of where they're going to extend their quiet, they're calling it a quiet rail application. They're going to extend that 2,000 feet past Andrews Lane to incorporate some of the houses that are on the other side or the southeast side of Andrews of the property as we go in that direction. And they're going to also extend it towards Route 28 so that we encompass some of the houses that were left off in some of their pilot program. So those two things, and we've had conversations relative to how that holds up. They've indicated it held up well over this particular season. The permit does require them to continue to maintain it during the life of the permit. So there's a maintenance responsibility with respect to that. They've also proposed some changes relative to the privacy concerns that were out there concerning some of the neighbors. We are within this permit, there is a requirement for them to begin a pilot program for a landscaping tunnel so that we can understand whether or not a landscaping tunnel will work. And if that doesn't work, then they're going to be back to us to have other conversations with respect to what we can do with respect to privacy. So we've tried We've literally tried to make sure that we could address those components that were of the greatest concern. There's also some concern. There was some concern expressed with respect to the safety of the rail. There is now a requirement in this permit for them to require a reporting requirement by the beginning of the season in terms of that. In terms of rail, there's no FRA requirements associated with this type of operation, so it's not an FRA inspection. But it's similar to what we were requiring with respect to Catskill Mountain in terms of the FRA inspection prior to start of service. So that's, we've tried to make sure that we've covered the basis with respect to the concerns. There is a safety plan that has to be filed as well. So that's all in this permit as it currently stands.
When does the sun set in the middle of the summer? Around what time?
I have 8:50 at the very
So
late.
What does this? What does that even mean? I mean, it's hours after the original agreement. So what does that even mean? And what? How early can they run?
We didn't set it at beginning time.
No, because there was complaints about early weekend runs that I think could have been addressed, and it doesn't sound like we really did much with the sunset provision.
Well,
is it really worth much, is it, if it's hours after the last run they're supposed to take? So not sure what we did for the hours. Doesn't sound like much. I'm still getting emails from all the residents over there about it. So they weren't happy. They didn't think they got much with this latest contract heard out. I think the company could be quite profitable and tweak those hours a little bit. You run through people's backyards over and over and over and over again.
So, Chair Petit, I've spoken with residents who live two houses away from the some of the people who are bringing these complaints, and they have expressed that they did not have problems before, but that these new changes have made it really even better than not having a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we I'm not aware of these more recent comments. They didn't come to me, so that makes it harder for me to address them.
Yeah.
I have asked, offered to meet with the residents who have these complaints and have not been taken up on that offer. So, you know, if it's in correspondence, then we should continue to work on it. The advantage of a sunset rule is that it basically addresses the safety issue. Can you see the bikes? And with the change in the sound, the ability of the bikes to run while there's still daylight is while everybody else is recreating. But when people are at home and expecting quiet, then they wouldn't be running. So I think it's a reasonable compromise given the benefit to the local community, which is substantial, and the benefit to the users of the bikes, which is not only their recreation, but it's very healthy exercise as well.
I'll just reiterate one last time. The sunset provision to me for most of their running time means nothing, because it's hours after they're not supposed to be running anyways. So I'm not sure how we could even refer to that as some kind of...
Is it either or? Is it not after 8 o'clock or by sun?
No, let me just see if I can explain
because,
it
I mean, in August the sun starts setting at 8:15 by the time it's September. Yeah.
Let me see if I can explain
Yeah, they're not running now.
I mean, all through the year.
Yeah. They only run
if I can explain
let
when
Director the sun's... Doyle answer the question.
Let me see if I can explain this better. One of the concerns has to do with when they leave the station. The other concern has to do is as they return to the station. So the sunset provision, in my mind, is applicable more not when they leave the station, but the sunset provision is applicable when they return to the station to make sure that they're not returning across Route 28 later than when the sun sets, and to manage their schedules accordingly. So as the time changes and as the sunset time changes, the managing of those schedules to make sure they could get back across Route 28 prior to sunset would be applicable and would make us could make a difference in terms of how they run their operations. And it addresses one of the concerns that we heard from the residents, which was they were running at night or in the dark past their houses. That would mean that they couldn't get back across Route 28. So I understand there may be some confusion the way I explained it, but that's why the provision was there. It's the out provision and the back provision together.
And just to tie that up, if they sent their last run out at 6:30, they were sometimes doing activities at the other end of the run, and so they would be coming back 9:30, 10 o'clock. That would not be permitted under this new way of addressing it, which is get back before dark.
And what happens if they do that? Who enforces this?
Well,
we shut them down.
These residents are shown they're quite able to bring complaints about the operations of the thrill bike.
And to this day, we've done nothing about those complaints for years. So what I'm asking is, what are we going to do if there's more complaints that something's not being followed? Because we've done nothing about running in electrical storms or any of these other things they've complained about. So,
through the chair,
yes, absolutely.
The new provisions that were put into the RFP that are in this permit address all those concerns. There's safety provisions. There's provisions about running it late at night. So to say that we've done nothing is not correct. Over the past year, we've received complaints. We've been addressing them. They're addressed in this RFP. They've been required tens of thousands of dollars of investment by this company in changes in their operation. So it's just factually inaccurate. And I think we have to basically go with what we've created and see if we continue to have complaints.
And during session, I'll bring all your constituents out that live along there. They'll talk in session. They'll reiterate what I just said. And if you could get those people that think this is better than it even was before and they loved it already and now they love it even more, if you can get them that live on the rails, if you can get those people to come and speak in public comment, I'd really appreciate that. But what you are going to see is your constituents saying things that I was just saying in a couple of weeks during session.
Chair Petit, okay. I just respond directly to that? I'm really happy to hear from my constituents. I'm very happy to hear from them. I'm less happy to hear from somebody who lives on the other end of the county.
Unfortunately, I'm the one that has to deal with your constituents.
And I just sent them your invitation to get in touch with you.
Thank you.
Legislator Arnold.
Thanks. I could have asked this question for the last resolution too, but both these railroad operations cross a state DOT maintained roadway. What role, if any, does New York State Department of Transportation play in the safety of these? We're on resolution 671, so let's talk about that one. This crossing up in the town of Shandaken, if any.
Good question. We have had some accidents up there.
Director Doyle.
So the FRA regulated crossings, and NYSDOT has looked at those crossings. Our DPW has looked at those crossings, so they are a permitted crossing on Route 28.
And if I may?
Yeah.
So the fact that it's permitted means how is safety assured? Is it the responsibility of the rider just to look both ways? Is it the responsibility
of... I'm sorry, Phil. My apologies.
Yeah.
I didn't
cross gates.
Yeah.
Flagging.
Yeah. There's cross gates and flagging up there as well. So they're extant up there and they have to be maintained. In addition, there is a variable message sign that's used on the Route 28 crossing. So what you think what's just happened on Washington Avenue with a major upgrade with gates and crossings has been in existence on the Route 28 mm-hmm. corridor for a long time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been there when they've come down.
Have we had a car accident or two up there with the rail bike?
Not that I'm aware of.
I'm aware of.
Yeah, I'd like to check into that.
The only thing I'm aware of is that when the gates were stuck one time, that a car hit the side of the gate. So I think there is that. If there's others, I think that should be brought to our attention.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think it was brought to all of our attention at a meeting up in Shandaken Town Hall just last year. It was talked about. Dennis, you were there, and so were you, Kathy. We all heard the same story.
Okay, I'm ready to call the vote on this. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Okay, Legislator Maloney, would you like to put yours in next, or do you want to sit? Put your way down here.
I'm here. Let's
okay.
Go in order.
All right. You want to go in order?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we are going to go back. I would like a motion to block ARPA funding for PARC. Resolution 601, 602, 603, and 604. Motion?
I'll make the motion to block those
second.
Resolutions.
Second. On the block, all in favor?
Aye.
Any
aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. Motion to discuss the block?
So moved.
Second.
Second. Any questions we have? No? Yes, Legislator Erna.
Thank you, Chair Petit. A minute while I get to it. Okay, in the town of Marlboro, one of the two parks is described as a Young's Park, a property owned by Jeffrey Aldridge and leased to the town of Marlboro, as opposed to Hewitt Chance Park, if I pronounced that correctly, which is owned by the town. So what kind of agreement do we have? I didn't see in the backup information about Marlboro's agreement with the property owner, but I'd like to know what that is before voting on this. Mm.
And if I could add, we have a similar situation in Sopus, where a property owner leases it to the town for $1 a year, and there's been substantial upgrades, including a very expensive pavilion. But I will defer to you on that.
Yes, I think that was an accurate statement. We've been very careful in all these contracts to put in the exact ownership, because we realize that there could be situations that we want to have an eye towards of ARPA money going to parks that are not fully in town or municipal ownership, and so that was the purpose of that language. So that is identified. I know we've had some communications with the municipality. I do believe there's a long-term lease agreement. We don't have a copy of it, but I know that we usually in the article, there's an article in the contract that usually identifies anything we need regarding the ownership before we provide construction funding. So I don't have a contract in front of me, but I'm fairly sure that that's within the agreement. And I know there's also another provision in the agreement where we have the right to ask for any leases or agreements.
Could we try and get that by ways and means, and also suppose that that lease did end between the town and the park? What would happen to our investment in it?
Certainly before the ways and means meeting, I could provide better answers on all these questions. We just have to reach out to the municipality, and I'm sure they'd be happy to provide additional information, which is what I'd look for, to get this decision.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions? Have a good night.
Thank you.
Hearing none on the block, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Resolution number 658, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a lease agreement with Astor Services for Children and Families for office space at the Golden Hill Office Building, Kingston.
I'll move it.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Any further discussion on this? Legislator Erna.
Is this standard length lease, 5 years?
It's a renewal. They're there right now, 2,000 square feet.
Is it similar? We can't contract with anybody over 5 years, so it's always going to be 5 years.
The county is prohibited from entering into a contract for
5 years. We could transfer the property to the EDA and then give them an endless lease.
Yeah.
Right.
You're doing that a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Another motion to block Resolution 659, which is to create a capital project, and then Resolution 661 and 662 for the vendors. Motion on the block?
I would move.
Okay. Second was Litz. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
We'll move the block.
Okay. Move the block. Second on discussion of the block? Thank you. Questions on this one? We've got another superstructure repair. Is this a replacement of the entire bridge?
What resolution?
This is 659, 661, and 662. And of course, I imagine 660 would be the bond. It is for the Rosendale and Lake Mill. Yeah. That's
in the town of Ulster.
In the town of Ulster, yeah. Didn't we just? I thought they did. No, that was a slope stabilization. Okay. I'm good. Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll call a vote on the block. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Have a good night.
Motion to block Resolution number 663, which is creating a capital project, and 665 for the vendor.
Second.
So moved.
Okay. All in favor of the block?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, motion to discuss the block. Thank you. Second?
Second?
Yeah, I took him out of order. I have the resolution now.
Okay, all right. I just want to make sure I'm signing the right thing.
Galeville, is it Shonga?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Did we get the second on the block?
We did.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
All right. I don't have any questions on the bridge. I'd like to see more. Do you have a question on the bridge? Okay.
Yeah. So it looks like the cost went up, and can we just go over how that all worked out?
So the bridge went out to bid. Price escalation on steel and other materials raised the cost.
Did the cost of the first part that we already paid for, the $110,000, was that over what we expected also, or was that right around?
That was for the design. Mm-hmm. That was the $110,000 was for the design. So that was finished. It didn't receive that.
That was within.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
That's why I would support our bridge people, because they can save us a small fortune on in-house repairing the bridges.
I don't think they can rebuild or...
No. That's a pretty good engineer.
Construct that bridge.
One more question.
Yes, Legislator Erna.
What do you know, Herb?
Was the construction inspection services, where... I pulled out the budget capital from last year. Where was that in there? Or was it in there?
I'm sorry, in where now? There was $350,000 allocated for construction.
That was already allocated in last year's budget?
No, that was allocated. That's allocated part of this funding.
That's a new
plan.
Okay, got it. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Can we change the resolution number on this one?
I know. Right?
Resolution 666, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $40,000, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into by Southeast Mechanical Corporation. Motion for discussion.
I'll move it.
Second.
For discussion, I'll second.
For discussion, okay.
Where?
Southeast Mechanical, yes, Legislator Litz.
Where and what building is this for?
Yep.
For emergency repairs of our hall records.
Okay. Thank you.
That building's going to be on the top of the list for capital repairs next year, after the space study?
Among others.
Yeah. For 75. There's a lot. Buildings in bad shape. All right. Any other? Yes, Legislator Erna.
Thank you. What does it mean, job order contracting?
Mm-hmm. Job order contracting is a program that we went out to bid an RFP for. Gordian is the owner of the job order contracting service. And then we set out all the disciplines, which is PC, plumbing, HVAC, electrical work, and be awarded to vendors throughout. So job order contracting is a book that's 5,000 pages long, and it basically has from replacing light bulbs to replacing the doorknob for building bridges.
Mm-hmm.
It's got every task that you can do in there.
It helps streamline our internal process. If our in-house staff can't do it, because it rises above their level, above their maintenance level.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's below that, and it's that it doesn't require going out to bid and formal design, we have this backup plan called JOCS. So we just bring them to the site. We say we need 10 doors replaced. Can you give us an estimate? And they can do it, and they are already on the backdrop contract through Orange County. They've already been approved to contract through you folks.
Yes, yeah.
And then they can start. So it really streamlines to a discussion we had last week about what takes so long to get projects done and started. This is our way of moving projects forward. So that's it in a nutshell.
Thank you.
Tool in our tool belt.
Mm-hmm. Any other discussion? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Resolution number 667, setting additional requirements in relation to capital project number 678, the purchase and acquisition of real property located at 1711, 1715 Ulster Avenue for warehouse storage and office space. Motion for discussion.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
And I would like to thank Legislator Maloney. It was something he had said at our last session. So I put in for this amendment. I don't know if you want to add your name to this or not. I don't know if there's any questions. I just wanted to ensure that we weren't taking a housing unit off of the market, and that it would be in writing. I know that was the intention, but it would be in writing that we were subdividing. And Legislator Nolan and Legislator Erner.
Yeah, no, I can't support this at this time. The discussion of approaching people who are renting from a different owner of the property made me very uncomfortable. I don't think it is appropriate for the county to go around the existing property owner to speak to tenants about a future situation. It is fine if the county wants to approach that property owner and the property owner wants to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that this locking the county in before we have acquired the property, before we have talked with individuals there to even know whether they want this is not good planning. We should treat them well, but we can treat them well and protect our own interest, which is that they may be desiring to leave because they don't want to be next to an active warehouse,
mm-hmm.
or any other reason. If they leave of their own volition, then we might want to use that space for something other than housing. It has not been a part of any discussion other than a few legislators saying, oh, it could be housing. Maybe that's the best and highest use, but I'd like to look at that and discuss it. Once we have that property, to see what other other needs we have. So I think this is just jumping in to try to protect an interest when that interest is going to be well protected, I believe, because we have entire consensus that if the family wants to stay there, then we would proceed along the route that is envisioned here. And we preserve for the future the right to, if they leave 5 years from now, have a discussion of what we want to use that building for. But I support their being able to stay, but I don't support locking it into being a residence and subdividing. We haven't acquired the property yet.
Was it Legislator Erner Maloney and Litz, or? Yeah, okay.
You've written that one down. You just told me when it's
my turn. Yeah, okay. Legislator Erner.
Thank you. I have no problem that we talked to a tenant and didn't go to the landlord first. I am concerned, though, that if we subdivide this and just sell it on the market, there actually is no guarantee that residents there don't have security if it's not sold to them that they could stay there. The new property owner could ask them to leave, and that would be that. So if we were going to do this, I would want to have some provision there that promised that they wouldn't be evicted, and I don't know if we can do that, but otherwise I can't support this.
Okay, Legislator Maloney, and then let's...
Yeah, I think we need to do something here. It is a house that a family lives in. Maybe that's why I'm feeling so much empathy, because I have a family that lives in a house, and it'd be, and we've rented in the past. So the idea that we're buying a warehouse, it happens to have a house with a family in it, that's got a little bit of distance. And the idea that we have the best interest of this family and we're respecting this family, but we're not going to speak to this family, doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think we could probably, when I asked the same question a couple of weeks ago in Ways and Means, has anyone spoken to the family? I was told, basically what I was told was, not to, if we did speak to him, it was brief, but the family is now actively looking for another place to live. And I kind of took away from that they expected to be booted out of their home, where I thought the compassionate thing to do these days when we have overflowing homeless shelters and not a lot of rental stock on the market was to talk to this family and say, We are attempting to buy this place. It looks like it'll probably go through. If we do, we're going to work with you. You will not be out of here in a month. Do not panic. We will work with you and do the best that we ethically can and ensure that you are not out of this house. I think that could have been a fair thing for some county representative to go and say to this family. I don't think we would have been crossing any lines. We subdivide the property. We absolutely should keep this home a home. And we should absolutely work inside our ethical capabilities to keep that family there within reason. We could, I'm sure, if we did want to sell and they weren't in, we're contracting with RUBCO to take houses off the foreclosure market, fix them up, and then sell to people for cheap. The idea that we don't have the leeway here to work with this family, I think, to make them the owners of the house is probably something we could realistically do. If not, then we could even look into a longer lease and sell the property with the lease staying. Rob, you could probably tell me if that's you can sell with a lease that carries over. No, yeah, different things we could do, and it starts with subdividing and keeping this home a home and showing some empathy to a family that is right now probably pretty panicked about where they're going to live next. That's what this resolution does. I think it makes a lot of sense. We still have the leeway to do all the things, Phil, that you want to do and be fair to this family. The idea that we're going to find, we don't even know off the top of our heads what we would do with this house, but that we're actually sitting here and speculating, like, well, maybe we can find an office, a couple of people to put in there and justify booting these people out of the home is quite not the road I want to take.
Is it my turn?
It is your turn now. Okay. You can be on the list. Yeah.
I think there's been a lot of speculation and a lot of conjecture around the table on what if, what happened, what if, what is that. This resolution is a subdivided piece of property. This property has commercial entity on it, and it has a residential house. We subdivide the residential off the commercial. We can rent it. We can lease it. We can sell it. Those are all things we can contemplate in the future. But it really doesn't belong part of a commercial piece of property. So whether we've talked to the people or not, or you know, whether that's proper or not, it's putting the cart before the horse. Let's subdivide the property. Down the road, determine what we're going to do. If I don't want to displace anybody either. But once we own it and it's subdivided, you can rent it to them. If they don't want to stay there, it's already subdivided, we can sell it for workforce housing, whatever we want to sell it for. But until we subdivide it, we're not doing anything. So I don't know why we're conjecturing all of what could possibly happen when all we're doing is subdividing the property.
And that was the intent of the resolution. Legislator Nolan, then Erner.
Yeah, I think that subdividing before we know if we want to have office space there or if we want to make it low-income housing, there are costs that are associated with implementing a subdivision. I'd like to have this family be able to stay. I think that those who are imagining that they're being booted out are the ones who are not kind of trusting this process. I don't know if we're legally allowed, as somebody about to purchase this property, to go talk to the tenants of the existing property owner about the nature of their relationship with that property owner. They're renting from somebody else, not us. Now, I'm very happy for this conversation to result in somebody answering that question, figuring out a way we can legally and ethically let them know that we are open to their staying, and then we can subdivide. If they want to stay, that would be the next appropriate step. But I just think we don't know what we want to do with that property. We are told by the existing property owners that their tenants are leaving, so I'm willing to just accept that and then say, how would we want to use that space? If DPW is 100% certain that they don't want to use that space for something else, and none of the other departments want to use it for anything. But have we asked those questions? I don't think we have.
So subdividing doesn't matter. We can keep it. We can turn it into office space. We can use it as residential. We can keep it residential. We can rent it. We can lease it. We can sell it.
It just clears it up into categories for you.
It's not even categories. It's two separate. It's two separate types of properties, and all we're doing is subdividing one off from the other. Even if we own, even if there were two commercial pieces of property, we might even want to subdivide it and...
Options.
Enough.
Legislator Earn.
I think this whole conversation ought to be had with the tenants, and I would like to invite them here, actually, and because, quite honestly, we're talking about what, and I'm not, if a landlord tells me what the tenant thinks, I want to hear from the tenant what they think. And I would be fine with moving ahead with this if the last resolve were struck, because I don't want to commit to selling it. That, to me, it provides them the least guarantee that they can stay.
Mm-hmm.
If we didn't subdivide it, I don't agree that we couldn't be a landlord to a tenant either, at least temporarily. You've heard in other spaces what I think generally about people residing on county property, and I'm in favor of it. But in any case, if we weren't going to commit to sell it and we just wanted to subdivide this, I would prefer that the current occupants of that house be part of the conversation, but I do support that aspect of this at this time.
Okay.
Make an amendment to...
Is that your motion?
Yeah, I move that we strike the last resolve. And
you have a second on that?
If it'll move,
yeah,
this...
Yeah, it doesn't change any of your points. Or
all in favor?
I'm in favor of the amendment.
Okay. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Okay, thank you. Any other discussion?
I would just, again, say that I could support this at a later date. I'd prefer to have information from the existing tenants, if possible, and requests from DPW and circulation to all the relevant departments about the fact that there is a structure. You know, we're doing space studies, we're doing other kinds of considerations to figure out how best to use properties. Maybe the subdivision makes sense. I'm just not convinced yet.
Yes.
We continue to evaluate houses or county owned or otherwise for respite housing, for opportunities there. We continue to receive and evaluate the space study, which again is another way to look at the county's needs. We have had different needs in the past for more residential-like office space for certain services and certain settings. So I think it is best to, of course, not evict these folks necessarily at the closing, and then evaluate.
But if we kept the property as it is without subdividing, mm-hmm. we couldn't let them stay because then we have people living on county
property.
There's no
difference, as far as we often have county properties that are different parcels. Contiguous mm-hmm. to each other and then have county uses on both.
But they're
them.
Privately leased to private citizens to live in?
No.
With their kids? Okay.
That's
okay.
No.
Legislator, let's
No, we lease them. We lease county property to commercial entities.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right across the street?
Yeah.
I don't see why subdividing this property precludes any of the thing we talked about mm-hmm. today. If we wanted the tenants to stay, if we're going to put another county office space or something, then we got to evict the tenants. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's our intention, is to put the people on the street so we can use their office space.
Right. But if we don't subdivide, they can't stay there anyway.
What's that?
If we don't subdivide, they can't stay there anyway.
Whether we do or don't, why can't they stay?
The subdividing doesn't do anything but give us options.
Yeah,
right. That's correct.
It has the options without
subdividing. It does nothing but give us options. It doesn't take anything away.
you know, I'm here as a member of this county government, and if this county goes and tries to evict these residents, I will be standing there with them.
For office space.
I'm very concerned about the discussion I hear here, where we're contemplating that as a possibility. I will not stand for that.
But we took the last resolution.
We did. We took it out. Yeah.
No, but the conversation has continued about, yeah. Well, we hope we're not going to have to. I want to hear us all committing to these people can stay in their home.
Yeah.
Whether we subdivide it or not.
Through the chair. If anything I've said has been understood as saying that we should do something else with the building, that's not my intention at all. I'm saying first choice is if they want to stay, then we will support their staying and do whatever we need to do to make that possible. You know, whatever legal structure we have to come up with so that the county can either sell it and with some covenants or whatever, or keep it but have some intermediary body lease to them whatever is necessary to keep them in place. That is what I want as a first choice. If they do not want to stay, then I think we should have a consideration of things such as Deputy Director of Planning Laval is saying, is there something that would be a county facility with a residential feel that would be valuable to have? And I'm not opposed to the subdivision. Did we actually close on this yet? Do we own it? I don't think we should subdivide it before we own it.
Yes.
I just want to make a comment that the county doesn't own the property yet, mm-hmm. and we can't do anything about subdividing it. We have to go to the town board, the zoning board. Yep. We have to do there's a whole process to subdivide the property. We can't do anything on it until we own.
I don't think anybody thinks we're going to go and subdivide it before we close on it. I don't think anybody thought that. I don't think anybody thought
it was really illegal.
It's not.
Through the chair, it's not in the resolution that this will take effect after the closing. So the reason that it's being discussed is because it wasn't put into the resolution, which would have made it proper.
So through the chair to Legislator Nolan, so we are hoping that if we go ahead and purchase, somewhere down the line, someone in this legislature remembers all this occurred and said, oh, hey, by the way, what about that single family unit that we potentially just took off the market? Because we'll go ahead and purchase it, and then who is going to follow through with watching this property to make sure it was subdivided, to make sure it should have all been included in this initial resolution. I'm okay with purchasing the property. I just want to ensure we're not losing another housing unit off of the market. So and it's my understanding, I mean, I've talked to some guys with buildings, they don't want another building to maintain. They're not interested in, basically, they have a warehouse that they'll be able to work out of. They don't want an office.
So the first time that this was raised, my understanding is that there would be a plan that DPW, who is acquiring this building, would put in place and would follow through on. And the legislature properly raised the concern about how to protect the interest of this family first, and then potentially to protect this as an additional housing unit. I agree with that happening. I believe that that will happen, given that we have DPW managing the property that we're buying. So this looks like an attempt to take over the operation and management of the property, and I don't think that DPW and the legislature needs this in order for these things to happen. If we are going to do it, then I think the resolution should be properly crafted so that it is on the table, on the desk of the DPW folks. And yes, when they close and we get these answers, then this gets taken care of. Maybe we want to ask for other members of the executives team to be involved to make sure that it happens. But to me, that's the way to do it. I don't understand legislating conversations with the residents of a property.
So even after hearing all the different input, your confidence is that this will stay on the housing market and it won't become an office space?
What I would like is to find out if we could even protect it for some low-income housing or worker housing. Is there a potential, for example, that somebody would like to work at the warehouse and live in the house next door? Would that be a benefit to the county? I think that having those conversations is helpful. I think this resolution is coming in before all those conversations. It's generating the conversation, so it has a benefit. But
and I think it'll all be forgotten once it's purchased. But Legislator Litz.
No, I'm just going to, one last time. This resolution cannot be enacted until we own the property. So putting that wording in the resolution makes no sense. Or maybe we should just put up a resolution that says the county cannot subdivide property we don't own.
That's a good policy.
Yeah, it's a good policy.
I think so. So at this point in time, let's just call a question.
Yeah.
I'd like to respond to that specific thing. This resolution is passed, instructs, resolves to do the subdivision. And it currently does not say when. So
it's illegal to do it prior to us owning it.
So why are you crafting a resolution that asks the county to do something illegal?
It says additional requirements to the purchase and acquisition.
Yes.
It says purchase and acquisition.
Yeah.
It does acknowledge.
It can only happen after we own the property. I don't know why we would have to put that in the resolution that we have to own the property before we can subdivide it.
Kind of does.
Yeah. Because de facto, you can't subdivide a piece of property you don't own.
Capital project number 678, it's the purchase and acquisition of this location. This is additional requirements to the purchase and acquisition. I feel as though the language is there, pretty blatantly.
Okay, I will call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye. Opposed.
Any abstentions? Thank you. Resolution number 668, amending the 2023 county budget, clarification and correction of settlement between the County of Ulster and the Ulster County Civil Service Employee Association, period of January 1st, 21 through December 31st, 23. Motion for discussion.
I'll move it.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Thank you. Legislator Maloney.
Yeah, this is squaring. I mean, you, Rob, or maybe you could tell me what percentage of DPW does buildings and grounds make up? 40%?
There's about 60 people, 60 employees, full-time employees in buildings and grounds.
How many people in highway and bridges? What's the total DPW number?
Highway and bridges.
There's a lot.
A little over 200.
Okay. So this is 20% of DPW didn't get a 570 raise in the last contract, the way the contract weren't given it. The way the contract reads, it was supposed to go across the board, number one, page 10, when describing what was going to happen in the contract, was all public works across the board was to receive this 570. I've had discussions with a lot of people inside of buildings and grounds, many of them underpaid, especially, I mean, when you talk about what you get in the private sector, people that are managing capital projects and saving us a ton of money. I mean, from one floor to the next, you privatize compared to our crew, you're talking about 20% of what we end up paying sometimes for a lot of different reasons. And so this just squares that 20% of DPW up with the rest of DPW that the contract reads was supposed to get the raise. I think there was confusion around titles, and I think it was a code thing was part of this, that the codes, if they're separate codes going back pre-charter, they were separate, different departments were separated out, and in 07 I think we had a bunch of resolutions where they all went under DPW, but a lot of those codes didn't necessarily change, which may have something to do with it.
Legislator Litz.
So, this is a $5.70 raise per hour for 163 employees.
60.
Oh, no, my math, $1.8 million comes up to 163 employees.
The average
work year is 2,020 hours. times $5.70 per employee is $11,000 and change. Divided into 1.8 million comes out to 163 employees.
It goes. Are you going back to 2020?
I'm going back for the period of time that they're talking about.
3 years.
21, 20, 23. Yeah. My math could be wrong, but
are you considering a 40-hour week?
It, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are you doing a 40-hour or 35-hour work week?
Your standard year is 2020. Which is 40 hours a week for, I forget how many weeks, plus your vacation.
I'm not sure about the, our budget analyst did the math, and it's, I was under the impression it was a hair more, but I didn't know what the actual percentage was of what Public Works made up, but if Public Works, everyone else, from, everyone else is considered basically highway. It's highway and, buildings and grounds and highway. So, correct?
Well, there's an engineering there's engineering.
Oh, the engineers are putting it over the top.
Well, what they have a separate, when you look up DPW, it seems they're broken into two.
Separate divisions.
But they all got that.
No, they didn't.
Central Auto did not get it.
And you have mechanic twos on the highway side that also are mechanic twos on the Central Auto side.
Amber, check this.
So.
She put in everybody, so they may be getting it. She put in everyone in Public Works that did not get that raise. So that's where your math may be somewhat correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
We wrote.
That's a lot more than 60.
Okay, then it's more. Then it probably is more than 60.
Okay.
I thought the mechanics were part of highway.
There are some that are highway.
Okay.
There are some that are
somewhere central.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is everybody. So this is. That's what I was going to say. I thought this was more like 40% of DPW. But, so, that does make sense.
What's the average hourly raise of a mechanic?
Outside? Or
no, here. I know what it is outside.
Rate? Outside, yeah.
Rate?
No. Hourly what rate. The rate is.
It depends on the year. It depends on how long they've been there.
$100 an hour or $20 an hour? Which one is it closest to?
Closest to, like, $20-something.
$20-something. Okay. $30.
I'm sorry.
We have her and
oh,
I.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Deputy Director LaValle and then Legislator Nolan.
I first want to just speak to the sentiment behind the resolution, and I think that, you know, the issues of wage issues, I should say, around certain divisions, certain titles across the county are a major consideration right now. We are in the process, we've selected a vendor for a compensation study and are in the process of finishing the contract for that compensation study. Because they are, frankly, global across the county workforce, you'll see that in this budget there weren't a lot of spot fixes when it came to titles and compensation issues. And that's because at this point in time, we believe the issues are of a nature that we really do need to take a look at across the county, all the titles. And so that wage study will be, I spoke to that last Friday, we're looking at a May finish to that, so that information will be available in the budgeting process next year, because we think that's critical, and also potentially looking at retro in those areas. And it's not just CSE titles, there are also management issues as well that are compression and things across county departments. The second issue is that this is a collective bargaining series of titles, and so that this agreement was that's how this agreement was brokered, frankly.
Negotiated
was through CSEA. To this time, we have had the formal kind of mechanism is to go through a grievance to bring up issues like this for pay with titles. To date, we have not had a grievance from this group of employees over this issue. Also, we believe that it's pretty clear in the charter that the duties of negotiating these types of collective bargaining agreements fall with the county executive per the charter language.
Yes, and the contract reads that they were supposed to get it is the problem. We think they deserve it, and the contract
point
reads
of order?
They were supposed
point
to get it.
Point of order, I was next on the list.
Okay.
Pretty sure she's the chair of the committee.
Yeah, I'm asking the chair if she considers this a point of order.
I mean, he was responding to something that the director said, but Legislator Maloney, did you want to finish it?
I mean, they could take us to court. The next thing, the UCSEA took us to court and won with something that you and I had a resolution
yeah.
up to give them the money.
However,
they won. What happens when this gets taken to court and we waste all this money because the contractor
is... They have not filed a grievance yet, which is the first step in
any... But we can make this right ourselves, is my point.
However, it is not the legislature's role to make that right. Not through this mechanism.
This is
so
completely,
I think my,
are you
my
saying
point
this
is
resolution
relevant here
is
rather than
legal?
This back and forth. The, I may I have the floor?
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. So I'm much happier to have counsel and the executive's office, who are responsible for this, determine what that language across the board meant. It is very easy to come from outside of a negotiation process and read language like across the board and think it has the common sense meaning, but it may not have been understood by those negotiating parties to have the meaning that we from the outside think. So I think to flag this as an issue is helpful. And if what was promised was not delivered, and that's what the negotiating parties come to discern, then I would support a resolution that says we will pay that extra. I also would like to have the executive's office continue to inform us if there are grievances from those who participated in this who feel that it's not being handled correctly. But this feels like the legislature coming in and usurping the roles of both those parties, both the executive's negotiating team and the union on behalf of the employees. So I would like to have somebody from, the unions or somebody who feels that they are aggrieved by what happened rather than are fixing a problem that when there isn't one.
Legislator Litz, and then I'd like to speak.
Okay. Are these competitive or non-competitive titles?
These are competitive as they're CSEA titles.
Competitive as in civil service?
Yes.
Well, there is a process with civil service. Mm-hmm. You have job rates, hiring rates, you have increments, you have all of those good things. Are we overstepping by superseding New York State civil service law?
I would say that this is a function of the collective bargaining unit, and this is outside of that process.
Then the civil service title and grade will have to be amended by the state to see that whether this complies or not.
I think there is a way for it to adjust the rates without adjusting the title. However, again, it's part of the collective bargaining process and the union.
But every title and every grade has a salary range in it.
Yes.
That by law you have to operate within.
Yeah.
So if this $5.70 an hour is going to put you outside of those ranges, you have to go through civil service.
I can't speak to where it puts it in the range within that negotiation, but just as to the process.
Because it's my understanding that this was already negotiated for. And we did run into this problem where we had the corrections officers who weren't paid COVID pay, and they had to take it to court. They did win, so we're spending tens of thousands of dollars on legal fees. And we still have to pay them out. I had another thought on this, and if it wasn't so late, it completely got out of my head. But, if it's in their contract, the other part of it is we do have legal counsel. Look at all of these, our legal counsel. So I'm surprised he wouldn't have red flagged it. It's not that we're giving them raises. This has already been negotiated for. And it hasn't been taken care of. So we could wait until they file grievances and then file it in court and pay more legal fees. Or we could pay them what's in their contract. It was Maloney and then Mellon.
So we literally, I think outside of contract, gave UCAT drivers a raise. Nobody had a problem with that.
Pay grade increases.
Yeah. We did the same resolution with the UCSEA where it was an existing contract that was negotiated properly by the executive with the union that read to something that wasn't being followed. So we put a resolution in. They actually took it to court, won, and then got their money. What we're saying here is we're following the contract that you negotiated. That's what we're saying, that you're not following. And we're giving the people the money that were promised the money in the contract. You are the ones that wrote a contract that read, all employees of DPW across the board will receive a $5.70 raise. I'm sorry if the employees that are under the executive branch of government don't always feel comfortable going and complaining to you guys. I don't know why that would be. I can guess. But they did come to me. I did speak to many of them. They do feel they deserve this. The language does put it there. A very good attorney in our office read the contract and said, I read this legally as if everyone in DPW should have gotten this raise. They would have a strong possibility of winning in court, in my mind, in my opinion. That's what our legal counsel that wrote the resolution, so obviously he feels it's legal. He's quite an attorney. So that's all we're doing here is making sure the contract that you negotiated and we approved is followed through on correctly.
Legislator Nolan.
In properly functioning government, as I understand it, those concerns would have been conveyed to the executive. Do I have the floor?
Yes, you do.
Those concerns can be conveyed to the executive's office, and that can be reexamined. And I don't get the sense that that has happened here. So I don't have the sense that I should go by either a legislator's reading of the contract language of this negotiation or even our very skilled legal counsel, rather than go back and investigate with the contracting parties, the negotiating parties. And that, to me, is what would be proper. So I think that this is, again, flagging an issue, but trying to solve it before it's been fully evaluated as to what solution is needed. If indeed what was negotiated and promised was the raise, then I fully support giving it. I just don't want to go by assumption from people that were not involved in that collective bargaining process. And so I would make a motion that we table this for now and come back to it when we get a report on what that bargaining process resulted in.
Right, before I call that motion,
I would just say that there are many different titles at DPW, and that MOA was specific to certain titles, and it is the opinion of both the county attorney's office and the personnel department, including the labor management relations specialist, that it didn't actually apply to those titles. There's in no way that we're trying to keep money that is due to some group of people from getting their due wages. However, that's not our both the county attorney and the personnel's office read of that same MOA, and that it does not apply like that.
Legislator Maloney?
I think we know why they're not grieving it. They know where the grievance is going. Section 1, salary increases, A, effective December 31st, 2020, DPW salary schedule increase by $570 across the board before the wage increases flow are applied. DPW salary schedule increase by $570 across the board. That's a legal document.
Is there a second to a motion to postpone?
To postpone, not
to
table.
To postpone.
I'll second it.
All right, all in favor?
Aye. Can we discuss?
Okay, on the motion.
So can I hear more from the deputy executive? I didn't quite understand what she said about the county attorney and personnel's opinion about this doesn't actually apply to all public works workers. I see the backup here. And this is what I've got in terms of the contract. I assume the contract is public, but this is what I had in my backup at the time.
On reviewing the MOA, since we were made aware about the resolution, that salary schedule is a separate salary schedule within the CSA collective bargaining agreement, which is only applicable to certain titles within DPW and not the entire DPW workforce. So there's a nuance to that, even that statement in there. But that's something that the attorney's office and the personnel office needs to bring to your counsel in order to discuss. But we do not believe that this is the way to do this.
Legislator Milano.
Yes. When you're talking about the schedules, they come later in the contract. And inside of different unions and different departments, you have different schedules. These are codes that are associated with civil service titles. This is across the board DPW. It's not across the highway department. It's not across this particular schedule. They would have put that. They should have put that. If they only wanted certain people to get it, they shouldn't say everyone across the board. If we ever sign a contract with the UCSEA and we say everybody in the UCSEA across the board, it's kind of hard not to give them all the same raise. But that's what we did. It was definitely a mistake, the wording of it, if you didn't intend for these individuals to get a raise and section off 70% of DPW to get a raise. I don't know why we would have done that to begin with, when we agreed that everybody was underpaid in DPW, especially in comparison to the private sector. But we wrote a contract that said across the board DPW, they're owed this. And I'll just remind everybody here that this is public work. This does go to Ways and Means, where there will be a healthy debate, and we'll get into the nitty-gritty of the contract there. It's probably more of a Ways and Means problem to go through and have this argument about the contract, which is still going there. But we have DPW here. We can talk to them. I'm guessing they think these individuals deserve the raise.
Hard question to ask somebody.
But why not give this to Ways and Means?
You don't want to raise
them. Yeah.
Everyone at DPW works hard and deserves to have a living wage.
Good. And just again, this MOA was very specific to an issue with CDL drivers, and particularly, more focused on those titles. So, that was the intent of it. That's the MOA. No one has ever grieved it, finding a different, and that is the standard way in which that's done. These folks have usually,
So, first of all, the bridge crew, many people that do not fall under that description receive the raise. And the idea that we keep saying they could grieve, we already have the answer. The county, you gave us, the county attorney has opined they're going to shoot down the grievance. So this is either we're going to do this, or this is going to be settled in court at our further expense, like it did with the UCSEA.
Mm. Legislative Millman, Deputy, unless you want, is it our issue response to?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, I'm not a lawyer, but I want to say something because other people who are not lawyers are saying things that seem to me to imply, the ability to make a legal judgment here. The process that the executive office has gone through seems reasonable to me. The executive's office has now heard that legislative counsel disagrees. What I understand about contracts and bargaining agreements is that it's a package. And it may very well be that this is what might be called infelicitous language, unhappy making language, not clear. That then goes back to, in a good process, to those individuals that were engaged in that process to see whether or not that can be fixed without courts and without, I don't know, what's the financial implications of actually implementing this?
$1.8
million annually. So, before you make a decision that results in a increase in the budget of $1.8 million annually, I think it's worth taking a pause, step back, let the councils talk to each other, and see if we work it out. If everybody agrees that, yeah, it was actually across the board meant this, and to everybody that's on a sheet of paper that came along with the contract, then I think we have to uphold that. But if the bargaining parties say, no, we never meant that, then fine, we start again. And if there are people who still deserve raises that didn't get them, then we have another bargaining process. But we're not, as legislators, as far as I understand it, allowed to insert ourselves into the collective bargaining process in this way. So I'd rather back away from it, get the answers on all of those questions.
All of the arguments it seems that we're having is more of a ways and means jurisdictional committee. So I would appreciate passing it and letting ways and means take up the personnel, legal, contractual part of this argument next week, right?
Mm-hmm. We do have a motion for a postponement, which would second it. So I'm obligated to call that vote. I understand your. What are the implications if the sponsor does not want a postponement?
That's not up to me.
It can be postponed up to three times.
It can still be postponed. Okay.
Over objection.
And then you can
over
call
objection.
For,
yeah.
Okay. Okay. So I'll call the vote then. All in favor of postponing it until our next meeting?
Aye.
All in opposition?
Opposed.
Okay. So it has failed. All right, so I will call the vote on this resolution then. All in favor of resolution number 668?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Okay. Any abstentions? Thank you. Resolution number 669, amending resolution number 488 of 2015, establishing a policy for rail with trail along the county-owned and Delaware Railroad Corridor. Motion for discussion. Legislator Litt, second.
Second.
Legislator Unger. Okay. Opening the floor for discussion.
Yeah. This resolution seeks to amend a policy that was established after over a year of careful investigation by the legislature, and it seeks to change a part of that policy that was specifically set aside to be addressed at the last section to be addressed after further evaluation. This resolution comes forward with no evaluation. There is no supporting material provided in this resolution for what is cited in one of the whereases as a report issued by Stone, a determination after the Stone Consulting report was submitted that the county had commissioned. Apparently someone else, perhaps the CMRR, commissioned something from Stone Consulting, but there's a claim that there was a determination that a co-located trail is feasible from the Stony Hollow Fill by using a parallel boardwalk similar to that used for a portion of the Ashokan Rail Trail. But there's no description of that determination from Stone Consulting provided to support the claim that Stone Consulting believes this. Stone Consulting was not contracted with Ulster County to make such a determination, and Stone Consulting is not a trail consultant. So I would like to know what those designs are, and I'd like to have the opportunity to evaluate those designs. I also believe that this section of the corridor should be evaluated, and that it is, I have been seeking a process to do that with the chair of the legislature for the past 2 years, and that hasn't come forward. So I can understand the frustration, the attempt to jump in and fill the gap, but I think we should back off, and again, I think we should postpone this And I would like to call upon the chair of this committee to convene a public airing of potential options for this segment of this corridor, in which the Stone Consulting, as a consultant to the CMRR, could come in and actually make some kind of presentation about what they think is possible, and other interested parties could come with other information for us. This resolution, I think, is also cuts across Resolution 670, which this committee passed out of the committee earlier this evening. And if we were to put this policy in place, I would say that we would have to go out for a new RFP on this section, because it wasn't contemplated in the RFP and the permit that we just issued. This policy also incorporates, without really articulating, plans that were attached to the resolution as backup that include the purchase of a parcel and the creation of a trailhead and the a train station facade with bathrooms, all of which should be considered as part of the policy if that's the basis for our changing the policy. And not doing that now would be, in my view, segmentation. You got, you know, a plan that is attached to this but has no substance to that either. Finally, you know, we have an Ulster County Trails Advisory Committee, and this proposal was not brought to the Trails Advisory Committee to have discussions about it and to use that as a forum. They're not obligated to do that, but since that they didn't do that, when they bring this to this committee, rather than write a resolution to support it, I think what I would ask is that the chair arrange for a setting in which we can have that information presented to us, as along with what I believe to be available from nonprofits on a pro bono basis, other evaluations of the feasibility of doing trail only, rail only, or rail with trail in this corridor.
Let's start a list.
Okay. Start from the beginning. Back when we had a track committee, the UND Corridor Track Committee, one of our last meetings, we had Stone Consulting on the phone to ask about this section of the corridor, 8.33 to Basin Road. And they reviewed their own report and reported to us at that meeting, which was probably the proper committee for it to come to, that it was feasible to have rail with trail, not without difficulty, but those difficulties have been conquered on other areas of the UND corridor. They're not cheap. They are definitely doable. If this does not pass, or any form of this, 488 stands, which means we have no policy for that section, which means nothing can happen. If this does pass, we can start building a trail tomorrow because the policy allows that. And there's TAP grants, and there's some other grants that would be available to start the trail. We're just postponing and delaying the building of a trail that would connect from O&W up to the Ashokan Rail Trail. Now, as far as the feasibility and having plans and putting the cart before the horse, this is only the extension of or policy for this 8.33 to 10.1. Would private individuals want to build on their own property as far as you know, a train station and toilets and a venue for concerts. I really shouldn't enter into our discussion, but that's a private entity. That's somebody else's land. And I don't know why we would predicate what we do based upon what the possibility of a private individual will do. So, by finally having a policy for this section of the UND corridor means we can move forward with rail with trail. With trail. You could start the trail as soon as this goes into effect. If this dies on the vine, then nothing will be done in that corridor until we change the policy. It's taken years, at least 2 years, to get to this point where a change in the policy is viable with Stone Consultants' input during our track committee. You remember the track committee? Do you remember this discussion?
I concur.
Okay. So there has been input by the consultant that did the original report as to this to be determined portion of 8.33 to 10.1. So I think it's the best of both worlds for everybody. The trail gets complete. We have connectivity of the trail. And you extend the railroad, so now we have a destination for people to come to. Get on the train in Kingston, take it to 10.1, ride their bike for 11.1 miles and back, get on the train, come back to Kingston, eat breakfast, eat dinner, stay in a hotel. I think it would be a boon for the economy. And I believe that's why Kingston Hurley have put resolutions and voted on resolutions to support mm-hmm. having rail with trail
and Marbletown.
In Marbletown in this segment, because I think it would be good for the county. I think it would be good for the constituents, and I know it would be great for the businesses along that corridor. Much like the Shokan Rail Trail has spurred the economy mm-hmm. up in that area, this would probably spur it tenfold.
So there are towns that have passed resolutions in advance of our having presentations on feasibility and what can be done in this corridor, but those resolutions did not include town of Woodstock, which also does have a section of this corridor, and it doesn't include the city of Kingston, which is the eastward logical terminus for this corridor, and it doesn't include the town of Olive, which is the westward terminus. Those towns, that town and city, and those two towns, I think should be a part of this conversation. I don't think we should have a November 1st policy drop that brings the lit solution on this. And part of it is, part of my real concern is that this notion of we can have rail with trail from the ONW up to the Ashokan Rail Trail. Randy Gustafson of Stone Consulting, I think, has a very different idea of what a trail is than what is needed in this corridor to really make real that claim. So Randy Gustafson of Stone Consulting has talked about, and CMRR has talked about, something that would essentially be a footpath. A footpath would not be negotiable by cyclists. And cyclists with electric bikes could very nicely handle a trail like the Ashokan Rail Trail. So you talk about this section being able to do for town of Ulster and city of Kingston and residents in the town of Olive. In order for it to be able to do what the Ashokan Rail Trail has done, it needs to be a rail trail of the quality of the Ashokan Rail Trail. And this legislature needs to know what that would cost, what it would cost to do whatever it is that Stone Consulting may be saying. I was there that night that we had that conversation. I do not consider it a proposal and a design concept to base a policy on to answer a question at, on a phone call at a meeting. That is not the kind of backup that I think that any reasonable legislator would want for this. So I think what you're doing is you may want to accomplish something at the end of the year to kind of do something, but why not? I mean, we can do a real trail if we have real trail consultants tell us what's possible and get involved in, you know, design on this. Stone Consulting is not a trail designer. They answered that question when we had them in here as consultants. Point blank, asked them. They said no, they were not. So why we would move forward with a rail and trail policy based on somebody who's not a trail consultant, it's basically a railroad policy, and you fit your trail around it the way, I mean, there's nothing here that even serves as a basis for knowing what would happen next in terms of that. There's some of the people who are attending the meeting.
First of all, I'd like to state for the record that we have not heard from Woodstock, City of Kingston, or the other towns that were mentioned with a resolution opposing this. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard opposition from those towns, counties, and city.
There is.
Excuse me?
There would be.
Second of all, earlier tonight, it was stated that why not bring Stone back to reevaluate this? Now they're not rail trail consultants, but they say they are, that's not their forte, but they have designed rail with trail in several places in the United States. And just like when we adopted this policy many, many years ago, there were no plans for the Ashokane Rail Trail. That comes after. This is a policy for rail with trail. You don't need to have design plans or final plans to go out to contract. This is a policy stating this is what the county wants. It gets designed later, and we as a legislature will vote on those. And I don't know why it's being considered a walking path. It would be something similar to what the Ashokane Rail Trail is, in my opinion. But we're only setting policy. We're not designing the trail. That comes later on. So we could make it 80 feet wide if we want, but you can't do any of that without the policy. So without the policy, nothing goes forward. A trail or rail.
Legislator Erner?
Thank you. I guess I am interested in hearing more information. I also would like to know about the second to last resolve where it says a railroad segment co-located with public trail wherever feasible. Does that mean that the trail would not be continuous in that area? And what about, is the trail contemplated to begin at 8.33 in the east and then go west and up from there, or would it continue? This is only talking about that segment, so I guess that's all that it is.
Yeah. It can't go beyond Basin Road. There's no more tracks. Could Legislator Litz respond and then...
Well, beyond Basin Road is the Ashokan Rail Trail.
Right, and there's no tracks.
To respond to that section, there are sections, at least one section, where you have a very steep slope with the railroad on top. You wouldn't be able to co-locate the train with the trail. The trail would probably traverse closer to the bottom of the embankment and go across. So it's not co-located together, but it is contiguous. It goes from part A to part B.
Thank you.
Yep.
Legislator Nolan and then Director Doyle.
So
Doyle,
the
is that? Where is it?
So I am also troubled by this language of wherever feasible here, co-located, because our existing policy calls for preservation of the trail. It does not call for whenever feasible. So this opens up the possibility of a misinterpretation. I also have some concerns because the what I know to be the case is that the Open Space Institute has done work in the corridor with permission of the county and has a feasibility study of substantial worth. They've invested their own dollars in doing a professional level analysis. I would like to ask this body to wait to enact a policy until we've been able to receive that a report from them on their findings. I also do not think that stone is a good source of information about trails, but I welcome their coming and presenting what their ideas are about bog bridges and so forth. They understand railroad. That's that was the foundation for their being chosen for the being the consultant for the work in 2014 that led to the compromise in 2015. That is now 10 years old. It needs to be revisited. This section, I think, is ready to be analyzed by the legislature. But we invited in the public. We had a months-long process, nearly year-long process. And so to have a policy be introduced at a meeting that gets moved forward so there's not even a full week's notice, and then, tell people, okay, this is the new policy, I think it's really disrespectful to all those people who invested all that time in 2014. And I just think we will do much better to measure twice and cut once than to jump in here. We would not be able to start building a trail tomorrow if we do this. The railroad would be able to start going forward, which is they want to do. And I think that they need to, if this is going to be rail with trail, they need to do this in concert with us, not like, they want it, therefore the trail now has to do its work around the railroad. Part of what the evaluation by the legislature should be is what would be the parameters under which we would do rail with trail. Would we specify, for example, that it would be ADA compliant as the current Ashokan Rail Trail is? This language doesn't build that into this policy. This language is what, a couple of individuals came up with, and it's just not as full and comprehensive as what we had for the original policy. And I think, this is a really hugely valuable resource. We should do this carefully, and we should do it really, with as much information in front of us. I haven't seen the full report of the Open Space Institute. I would mention that report was done with the help of GPI associates, and it is normally the habit of Legislator Litz to recuse himself when that company has been involved in work that's relevant to the issues in front of us. I bring that to the legislator for his consideration, that there is work that's been done by his company on a rail trail feasibility study, and now that legislator is listed as a sponsor on a policy for that very corridor. I think that's problematic. So the way for us to really do right by the value of this resource is really to have a good process on this. I would be happy for Public Works to take the lead on it. I have asked the chair to reconstitute the Trails Rails Advisory Committee. That didn't happen. Okay? So let's fill that gap. But let's do it by bringing in what we know to be available. Let's at least get, I think there was a letter from Stone Consulting about railroad trail. Let's get the letter into the record. Let's have whatever else they want to provide, or anybody else that the rail ride wants to bring in. But I know that there's skilled professionals who have looked at this, and I haven't seen their report yet. So why would we move forward? That's not our usual way of working.
Director Doyle, Legislator Litson, and
I'd like to respond to that, please.
Herb, you're not the president of the board of Stone, are you?
No.
Not sure you would abstain if you were.
Legislator Litson, since it, some of
the wording co-located in engineering terms is adjacent to. So, where it is not directly adjacent to the track, it would be somewhere else in the corridor. That's why it was worded co-located. Where possible, put much like they're doing with Hopewell Junction and Beacon, the trail is adjacent to the tracks or whatever. Where possible, put it near the tracks. Where it's not, it's going to have to be somewhere else in the corridor. Second of all, I didn't work for GPI when this report was done. It was done probably two decades ago. I am requesting that the chair of this committee ask the ethics board as to whether it's appropriate for me to vote or not vote or even discuss this resolution. And I will wait for their response.
But point of clarification, I'm talking about a recent study in the past 2 years.
I am not aware of that.
Yeah.
The only study I know of was in like 2001. And it wasn't only here, it was a very large study, O&W and all of that.
I know that study as well.
Director Doyle?
So thank you. And I think listening here is an exercise in terms of advocacy by two different disparate uses, and can they be accommodated together? And what we've heard tonight, or what this resolution purports, is that there is a solution that they can be accommodated together without any sort of look at the other side. The due diligence that's been ongoing from the railroad is commendable, but there also has been due diligence ongoing with respect to the trails committee, with respect to the trails advocacy group, with respect to what can be done here. And there's been a substantial amount of investment in terms of looking at engineering work, doing planning level estimates, et cetera. So before we decide to change a policy which may or may not be able to accommodate dual use, even if it's adjacent to the trail or somewhere else in the corridor, I think it would be prudent to essentially let both sides essentially have an opportunity to go through that advocacy work for consideration by all of the people involved. I will tell you that having been through this rather agonizing discussion with respect to railroad versus trail use in other locations, including the Midtown Linear Park, including the Ashokan Rail Trail, it's not something I wish upon this legislature, but I think it's necessary in this instance. And I would just say that we have seen some of the work that OSI has done. OSI is certainly willing to make the presentation to this legislature. This work is not an insubstantial cost to OSI. It was done on the basis of advocacy. I would also say that if we go to the current location, which is at 28A, and we create the rest of this to trail that runs to the Ashokan Reservoir, the same discussion with respect to you can get on a train and go to a destination and then get on a trail still occurs. The real question is can we actually make this work? And I would just urge everybody to sort of step back and say, let's look at both sides. Let's take some time and look at that and then consider the resolution, because there was an enormous amount of discussion and gnashing of teeth and understanding of each other's desires in order to get us to where we are today. And I would hate to see us sort of come to a different fractions as it relates to this particular section, which was a to be determined. And I think Legislator Nolan and Legislator Litz is right, and perhaps the resolution is timely to essentially to make us think about how to do this. But I'd like us to actually think about how to do this rather than simply react to a proposal by one advocacy group and not see the proposal and the information from the other. And my apologies to the committee. I'm involved in a planning board meeting on the other side of the hall.
Okay. I'll let you respond, and I'd like to say something.
This is just a quick thing. Unless Legislator Litz knows the answer, I don't know the width of the corridor at the bottom of the embankment that he's talking about. So to talk about co-location wherever is possible, and if it can't be right next to the rail, then we'll put it somewhere else in the corridor. The corridor has varying widths, and part of the reason it couldn't be co-located is because of the high fill that the corridor runs on top of. That fill covers a lot of the bottom of that embankment. So the question of whether or not you could put that footpath even in that at the bottom of that embankment needs to be a serious question if we're going to say that that's the policy, is that it be there. So the research by Open Space Institute would answer that question for us, I'm sure. And if Stone or somebody else has a different answer, then we could look at it together and sort it out. But I would like to know that what's being, you know, that if we say this is the policy to do it, that it's physically possible to follow the policy. And can I give part of my time to Kevin Smith?
I'm concerned about including the public at this because there's more than one person here. But, I mean,
I don't think there's going to be a lot of people to speak.
How does the rest of the committee feel?
Let the public speak.
All right. No more than 2 minutes, please.
I'll do my best. Kevin Smith. I'm the chair of the Ulster County Trails Advisory Committee. I'm also chair, board chair of the Woodstock Land Conservancy. We advocated since the initiation of the Catskill Mountain Rail Trail proposal in 2012, and are excited that you all are taking this up. This is the section of the corridor that in the policy, Resolution 488 from 2015, calls for it to be the last section of the corridor to be decided, rail or trail or both, and that it warrants further investigation. I will say I was totally blindsided to get a phone call yesterday to hear that this resolution had been introduced. Nobody has called the Trails Advisory Committee. Nobody's appeared before us, spoken to us about this. This appeared out of nowhere. OSI has done a considerable amount of work. As you all know, their West of Hudson Greenways initiative is looking at a connected trail network west of the Hudson River, and they are right now spending well over, I think it's over $400,000, doing a master plan feasibility study of the entire O&W corridor between Kingston, Logical Terminus, and Port Jervis. They, on their own dime, took up this feasibility study of the Kingston to Ashokan section, including studying in detail with both surveying and engineering the undesignated section. They have relevant information to bring to bear here. And this is what further investigation means, right? This calls for, if this is the time, we have been very, as an advocate, we've tried to be very respectful of the legislature's time and energy. We all remember the fight. We remember how difficult it was. And we have been respectful and waiting for the time at which the legislature determined to take this issue up. And Herb, maybe it's time. Maybe this is that time. If that's the case, let's do it right. All we have asked for, as we've waited now for, you know, the years, and since the Ashokan opened especially, is that when the legislature takes it up, that we have the opportunity with our fellow advocacy groups, with the trails organizations like Open Space Institute, to put forward factual information, the best information, professionally generated information that we can bring to bear on this issue and make that available to the legislature so that you can make the most informed choice as to the highest and best use or combination of uses in the corridor, preserving trail connectivity in a meaningful real way between Kingston and the Ashokan, and determining the disposition of the undesignated section. Hey, if you're going to give it to the railroad company, why not give it to the trail? Let's extend the Ashokan Rail Trail a mile and two-thirds east. Let's connect it to Morgan Hill. Let's connect it into the business districts in the town of Hurley section, in the undesignated section. A lot of that's zoned commercial. That would be a great opportunity site to have new and existing businesses tie in to the Ashokan Rail Trail. We have over 200,000 visits a year to the Ashokan Rail Trail. So I would challenge the assertion that the railroad company is actually going to create more use than extending the trail east. But let's have the discussion. If this is the time, let's have the debate, but let's do it in a fair way. And please, I ask you, withdraw this resolution, table it, so that the public knows that the process is one that they can engage in, and that it's going to be a fair process. It's going to treat both constituencies fairly and really look at the best way to do this. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
If I could, and then Legislator Green, and we can't take any more comments, I'm sorry, from the public, but we do have public session on November 14th.
Yes, I'm just going to ask for more time for a public hearing.
Yeah. So, you know, I've heard about preserving the trail. This section right now has only a track. And OSI, I mean, we've provided substantial amount of funding, so on the other end of it, OSI looks at open space and trails. I've heard the Stone Study likes railroads. I mean, we have two very different organizations, you know, who have their own opinion on what needs to go in. We've also tried to reopen the track committee. So we also, as far as legislator lists, I know I'm kind of all over the place. I'm comfortable with you voting on this. I will go to the ethics board.
But this is not for, he's
not currently a vendor. And I think many of us sit on committees where they are county funded, and it's with the understanding we don't have anything financially to gain from this.
Are you going to vote tonight? No.
Well, you know, GPI has done, you know, work for OSI.
Right, but not in this particular. The study
that was done on this corridor, no county funds were expended.
Right.
So that was a private deal.
We're not hiring a vendor.
But I want an ethical review, because if we're going to start having people recuse themselves for what goes on in the private, if you own a business, you sell liquor, you know. So maybe you shouldn't vote on public consumption of liquor. I don't know.
Any drug and alcohol use policy.
The lease for the Santa Fe. Yeah.
Okay.
No, I understand.
So,
I was just asking if you're
voting
tonight.
I want the Ethics Commission to hear this and make a ruling, because I don't want to vie on the edge here. But what I am hearing is Trails has got, if we can hook this and do this, just think what that'll do for the economy. We got commercial, we got this, we got that. The train people say, wow, geez, we're bringing a lot of people to this county. 78%, I forget the number, but I remember. 87% are people from outside of the state or the county, whatever. So they're bringing a lot of money in. There's a lot of sales tax, all of those good things that we reap. And I thought, my God, what a perfect combination to put a rail and a trail, mm-hmm. and everybody would be happy.
Right.
Commercial would be good. The people could ride their bikes. Mm-hmm. I don't know about electric bikes. So I'm not sure if we really want them on a trail. But, and then the train could bring people up, you know, that can't negotiate, the handicapped people or whatever, and put a rail car with bike things on it. So people say, I don't want to go, I don't want to bike from Kingston to the other side of Ashokan. I can't do 30-some miles, but I'll do the 11 miles or maybe 5 miles and turn around and come back and then take the train back to Kingston. I thought this was like a perfect marriage. And when Stone had alluded to us that it is feasible, it's not that it's not feasible. I mean, we're going to build a platform and some housing up on the moon pretty soon.
We built a trail through the swamp from Washington Avenue up, so if we can deal with that kind of terrain, I don't know why we wouldn't be able to build
I think we're jumping.
There was $4 million just to blacktop it.
I think
we paid for it.
That's why you need to see OSI's report.
And right now we're spending how many millions to do from the viaduct area there? The first phase, what's the first phase cost of going up to High Mount? Just under $4 million. And then phase two is going to be more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're spending tens of millions of dollars already.
Right.
So for this mile and something, if we spent a few million and got a bigger bang for the buck, I think was what I was thinking.
I have 5.65 on those two
sections. What's that?
If I could, and I'll turn this over to you real quick. I just have to...
No,
Legislator Green, Legislator Nolan, Legislator Maloney. Okay?
I'm speaking for
and
the
I'm just going to turn over to Legislator Letzroy. Okay.
No, you're chairing the committee.
I'm chairing the committee.
You can chair
Green,
from
Nolan, Maloney.
You're next.
Thank you.
Be my guest.
Okay. I want to just say that I have brought this up many, many times, that we need to convene the track committee because that's where this conversation belongs. And I've gotten nowhere. And I've spoken to, you know, both sides of the aisle and the powers that be, and people keep deferring. One other thing I want to say before I have two things to say and then I'll conclude and pass it on, but you can move a trail. You really can't move the tracks. The tracks are going to have to be where they are. So if there is a reason where they can't be side by side, moving a trail is a very relatively easy and logical solution to keep continuity. And the last thing I want to say is that we're still doing this. And those of you who have seen me get up on the floor of the legislature multiple times and say, with conflict, you cancel each other's value and you cancel each other's information. And with collaboration, those become additive and you get the best possible solution. But we're still doing this. And let's be really clear. This is what we're doing, and we can't come to the best possible solution for Multnomah County until we really respect each other enough to build a solution that's best for the county. That's all I wanted to say. But we really should convene the track committee because that's where this conversation belongs. But I don't think that should stop this resolution from moving forward, because that would be exactly the context that we need to move forward. Thank you.
I've asked the chairwoman several times, and crickets.
Who's next on the queue?
I think I am. So there's consensus among the people who are concerned with this corridor that we should have convened a track committee. I have repeatedly asked, in fact it was my only request when I came back into the legislature, was that I be appointed to the track committee. I said I'd do any other committees that I could be of service, but I wanted to be on the track committee, and I expected it to be convened shortly after that I took that term 2 years ago. So we're in agreement about that. I would ask for accommodation to shifting to maybe just having this committee do that work, because we didn't get that, and it's in the chair's hands, and if the chair hasn't done it until now, the chair is not going to do it in the next 2 months.
Plus, so, she won't be here in January. Yeah.
So we could do it, we could wait and do this in January. That would be fine with me. I think it would be better. We've got budget, we've got all this other stuff. I don't even know what the Sheriff's Department is here for, and I'm sorry we didn't address it. I am so sorry. We could have moved whatever you're here for to the top of the list.
Unless
you're
keeping the
key. You're doing a great job.
You'll know next.
So sorry about that. But I do think that there is an effort. There's been an effort from several people who have spoken to get out of that conflict that the legislator Green is saying we're locked into. I think that's not quite true that we've locked into it, because what the public is asking for, what I'm asking for, is that we step back and that we have that kind of process. That we do that before we enact a policy, not after we enact a policy. We need to know, you know, Stone Consulting gave a seat-of-the-pants answer to a question at the end of a consulting process that was diametrically opposed to what they put in their formal written report that we have for them. So how do we reconcile that? I would like to see what they were thinking when they said that. And I'd like to have the professional engineering of the widths of the corridor and what's actually feasible. This is how I think professional engineering is done, is that you get your data and you look at the actual situation, and then you say, yes, it is feasible or it's not. I'm just not convinced from an answer in a phone call message that it's feasible. Maybe it is. If it is technically feasible, I'd like to know how much it costs, because I think the legislature should take how much it costs into consideration in forming the policy. In my view, the CMRR has said that it has great value to them to go to 10.01, or let's call it milepost 10. If they can't actually get into the Ashokan Reservoir, which is at 10.1, then I don't see the additional value of going to 10 instead of 8.33 or something in between. So I'd like to hear why that is. I think there's a lot of things that could lead to that understanding of the positions of the different constituencies, but it doesn't happen by putting the resolution in that says we're just going to, you know, decide this now when we didn't decide it 9 years ago. So if we could come to the common agreement that a publicly available process with all the available information would be the first step, then either get the track committee, you know, formed to make a policy recommendation, or let's make a policy, form a subcommittee of public works and take it on. I do think that the new legislature would be more receptive to this, and I think simply the chair of the existing legislature did not convene the committee that could have been addressing this. And I'm sorry that that is the case, but that's what we're faced with. So I would make a motion that we postpone this resolution for a month and move on to other work so that we can actually create the process.
We have a comment from Legislator Maloney, and then since we did hear from Trails, I would like to give CMRR 2 minutes.
Quickly, I think from what I've seen, who I've talked to, it does seem to be feasible to do both. That being said, I think something I've been talking about lately is the sustainability of the trails we have and going forward. The railroad is not asking for any money. We're paying for the trails, the upkeep of the trails. We're now finding out last year in meetings we were told that members of DPW that are supposed to be taking care of trails are actually pulled off at times because of staffing, to the point where we can't even keep up some of the trails that we have, to the point where we now have so much fentanyl being shot on a trail in the city of Kingston. The sheriff just today is saying he might have to put Narcan stations along the trail. So to hold up the rail when I'm not even confident that we're ready to move forward on county-funded trails for a while going forward until we make sure we have the staff to upkeep the trails we have, the Sheriff's Department and the rest of us figure out a way to keep the trails that we have safe, And I think that this is feasible to do both, but I think we're far away from doing both because I don't think we can go any further with any more trails until we have the money, the staffing, and safety issues taken care of. So I'm comfortable moving forward, but that's me.
Mr. Hunt?
Yes, I just wanted to make a couple comments here. When this was done in 2015, the tracks were not fully renovated up to 8.33. They are now. We finished the renovation 4 years ago. We spent $700,000 of our own money that we generate from what we generate in revenues to fix the tracks up. We want to continue working. It doesn't cost the county anything for us to continue to renovate the tracks. And if the policy hasn't been decided, we know the risk is that that work and that money maybe have to be dismantled, but we're willing to take that risk. We want to continue working, going west. And also, we signed a lease with the property owner at Basin Road, who refused to allow the county to build a trail through there because that property owner is, the county only has an easement through there for rail. Mm. We leased, the lease signed with them allows a trail to be built. The county was not able to accomplish. Chris White tried, and he was unable to. So we really would like to work with the trail community on a plan that would be great for the railroad, but it would also be great for the trail community. We think that Basin Road property, because we control it, is not in the DEP section. So you can do a lot of things there that would be beneficial for the railroad, but also beneficial to the trails. We think it's the key piece of land to make everything work for both sides. And again, it's not in the DEP territory. So we would really like to move forward. We just don't want to just have to sit and do nothing for another 8 years. That just seems like a waste of everybody's time.
Mm-hmm. Who's suggesting that?
Was there a second for postponement?
Well, it's been 7 years. You're going to second the motion to postpone? Yeah. All right. On the motion to postpone, all in favor?
Aye.
Do you want to postpone, Legislator Litt?
I'm waiting for the determination that you're asking for.
Let's not act then, because then you're not doing anything.
All right, then I'll abstain.
So I withdraw the motion and ask that the committee take no action so that Legislator Litz is not put in the position of voting in any respect.
I'll withdraw my second.
Thank you. That's helpful, whoever made that suggestion.
Yeah, for 9 more years.
Could I just say that I don't believe anybody is saying we should wait 9 more years?
But that's what's going to happen. This is how government works, and it's really unfortunate. And as you heard, you can't get a trail through there anyway. I mean, I look at the capital budget. We're putting $10.5 million into trails.
All right. We didn't act.
I know. Okay.
What was said was that a trail shouldn't go through there.
That's county workers here waiting.
People should bring it to a public forum where people can evaluate that kind of comment.
Chair Petit, if I may, it's getting late, and we have quite a bit of business left to conduct. I'm wondering if after the next resolution we could somehow put a pause on and schedule another meeting to finish our month's business.
I would support that, but before we even discuss that, could
we do
one
more?
This is your resolution next.
So resolution, number 676, establishing the Ulster County Fleet Management Review Committee. Motion for discussion.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Okay.
So this, I know there's people here, just to bring a little bit of clarity to this, there was a policy from 2007 that had to do with vehicle purchases. We definitely are not following that policy. It was pre-charter. That may be the reason. So a big part of this five-member committee will be discussing that policy, going through it, and possibly recodifying it after the charter, and doing a little more due diligence on the legislative side as we approve vehicles going into the future. The other thing it will do is it will take a look at the fleet, and it'll take a look at take-home vehicles. We will not be getting into anything with urgent undercover, won't have anything to do with it. Obviously, that stuff is not something to be talked about openly in the public. But I do think the legislature, it is long overdue that we take a look, and I don't know, it's five legislators, all parties will be brought in at different times to talk and hear out about the vehicles, but I don't really see where this isn't good government. I think the legislature should probably do this a little more often. I think four or five times a year you take a topic and you hammer down, you get five to seven legislators together. Sometimes it's a commission and you bring in other electeds and members of the community. Sometimes it's just legislators, and we do a deep dive, we make some recommendations, maybe we come out with a policy and some procedures, and that's what I hope for here.
Question, Ms. Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, I have a question about some of the whereases here, you know, such as the whereas that the county is no longer following the adopted policy, and I think we probably have people here who could speak to that. It's the factual basis for the bringing forward of this resolution, apparently, and it has been my understanding that we aren't following the adoptive policy. So could we have some of the people?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, yeah. We have people, you know, who...
Through the chair, Chair Bartels, it was her. She actually wrote the policy and says that every single part of the policy is not being followed.
I heard her say that, but I don't know that we have sat down and said this, and this, and we didn't ask the people who would be in charge of following the policy. Or implementing the policy.
I heard from what I was understanding is that it was pre-charter, and you guys didn't feel as though
the Charlie Busick policy was pre-charter. However, there is a policy on the books regarding vehicles, regarding take-home vehicles.
But it's not
standard operating procedure that's held within DPW, and that's certainly what's followed. There is policy and there's procedure around take-home vehicles. We have the fleet manager here. His job is to oversee the fleet, oversee take-home vehicles, oversee all aspects of the fleet. So.
But the question was, are we following Tracy Bartels' 2007, the Charlie Busick policy? Which I don't like naming policies after people.
It was a yes or no question. Excuse me. If you were to read the policy, there are tongues in it that no longer exist. It's not possible to follow it.
Thank you. You answered the question. The policy's not being answered, and that's a major thing that we're going to...
Can I clarify?
Can Deputy LaBelle finish?
I didn't say that. I said that if you look at the policy word by word, right, it refers to titles that no longer exist with certain kinds of reporting that's not needed anymore. There is an internal procedure for this that's on the books with DPW. DPW does track, and they pay a benefit for every time they use a take-home vehicle. So that is included. Big picture, what I want to say is that the county executive, she is very adamant that this is an issue that we're going to look into. We have been looking into this, and we're going to continue to do that.
So are we
hopefully. We would like to work with you on a policy that brings the intention of the Charlie Busick policy into an up-to-date fashion that also reflects our current systems and also our current structure, and that and also respects the certain uses and titles, you know, of the vehicles, some of which you said before, but that it gets to that point. But this is a very, she's very serious about taking autonomy.
Did you bring breakfast too? Because we might need it.
No. Mixed up.
Purvis saw you.
Yeah.
In my mouth. Okay.
Well, Amanda was still talking, but she saw the nuts.
What I am hearing is that the existing policy that existed before the charter needs to be updated, needs to be tweaked, needs to maybe even be rewritten. And the legislature is putting together a committee to do that. So what's the issue?
And we're policymakers, aren't we?
So, well, we set policy. That's what we do.
However, excuse me,
dynamic.
Okay.
We have a fleet manager. That's a position that didn't exist in the same in the same way at that point in time.
Phil, you make this yourself?
That this is something where we would like to bring something forward. We would like to work with you on it.
Sure,
however,
yeah.
I don't think this is something that is either effective, efficient, or really well reasoned to have that happen without the folks who have day-to-day operational knowledge about how this works.
I'll let you know.
So I accept the correction. I was under the impression that we do have a policy. I thought it was the continuation of the Charlie Busick policy.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know it had morphed. And I fully support our updating that policy. I don't think that we have to convene a whole new committee to do that, because we can do that with the staff that we have and with the it sounds like we have a lot of consensus goals. So why don't we look at the existing policy and the Busick policy together side by side and see where we need to bring something forward. If there's something important that was missing, we'll put it in. But, you know, this is we have this resolution which calls for the constitution of a five-person body and all this elaborate thing for a policy that can be updated in a matter of hours, and with 60 or 70 million dollar probably trail and rail project, you know, we haven't had a committee meeting yet. So let's be reasonable about this, and I think there's a possibility of the existing policy being revised in a way that satisfies the intent of the original Busick policy. That's what I thought was actually happening from what has been reported to us by the fleet manager and others when this kind of question has come up in our committee before.
Legislator Malonian and Levin.
Yep. So I don't think we have, we definitely don't have a current policy either. Nothing's ever been codified. We are the policy makers. We're going to go through that policy as policy makers. We're also going to go through a lot of the fleet that we have. Right now, I think we have more than double what Dutchess County has as far as take-home vehicles. That's alarming. I've had whistleblowers from multiple departments come to me. Actually had a lawyer from the county come up to me at a soccer game the other day and ask where he could get a take-home vehicle, and then he went on to tell me how absurd he thinks the amount of take-home vehicles we have are. That's the reality of the world that we are living in Ulster County. We need to take a look at all the people that are tax-funded take-home vehicles. We just learned that the commissioner of DPW was driving around a $70,000 Mustang. Now that's floating around the sheriff's department, which I'm told was a vehicle that was going to be used in some, in the paper at least I read, as a, what is that vehicle being used for right now?
It goes to admin or detectives for like EV car.
Well, I should be a,
it was,
should be
it, in the paper I was told it was a pursuit vehicle, so it's not a pursuit vehicle?
No, absolutely not.
Was it, so it was incorrect what we were told in the paper?
We use our,
oh, imagine that.
The EV cars are solely an administrative board.
Yeah, no, it wasn't the mistake of the reporter. It was a direct quote from an elected official.
No pursuit vehicles.
Yeah.
There's not one in the sheriff's office.
Yes.
No EV pursuit vehicles?
No.
Oh,
that's why I knew that was a false quote when I read the article. So a CO did not take that vehicle home at all?
No, there's no CO attached to that vehicle.
No. No, any COs driving? Any COs driving Mustangs right now, or over the past month?
Time now.
Temporarily.
Was that worth it?
No.
Can we ask that question through?
Yeah, we've used it. Some of them for pool for training. Like if somebody had a training at like another department, we've used it for that.
No captain took it home while his car was being worked on.
Did you use it as a spare?
I'm not sure. But now they're permanently assigned.
Yeah.
One's professional standards, and I believe the other one's in Oracle.
Okay. But these are the kinds of conversations I think we need to have. And there is, and when you have 300,000 people living in Dutchess County and somehow they have to take home vehicles, this comes down to fund appropriation as well.
I'll tell you, what's there morning today, we had a call a little afternoon where a tortured soul jumped off the bridge. We made our call for the dive team and for the navigation team. Had to be 10 people that were off duty that came to that scene to go out and find them
And thank God we found him around 6:30 p.m.
And me putting this resolution in had nothing to do with the sheriff's department. As far as you're concerned, there may be other legislators that want to look. I am not. I don't think that we're going to have many findings with regards to the sheriff's department and take-home vehicles. Perhaps I don't know if a CO should be driving. I was told by another CO that that's a fringe benefit of becoming a captain in the jail, that you get a car. I think you can drive back and forth to work as a CO. I think you can, even if you're an elevated CO. So there may be some findings there as far as the sheriff's department too, but that's our job. And it's our job to have these kinds of conversations. It's not pleasant, but we work for the taxpayer. There's 200,000 of them out there, and we work for them. And we got to make sure that we're spending money right and that we're not giving things away that we shouldn't be giving away, and that a lot of times, you know what, people could drive to work. I drove to work my whole life. My father and mother drove to work their whole lives. Most of our constituents drive to work in their own cars their whole lives. And if you're going to use the car, there are certainly people that need take-home vehicles. I'm one that has advocated for marked patrol vehicles, liking the idea of them going home, sitting in neighborhoods, being able to respond when you're coming directly getting on work and not having to drive to get. That brings safety. I'm one that's always advocated for that. So I think for the most part you'll find that at least my part on this committee will not be giving the sheriff's department a hard time, but looking at the rest of the county, maybe in certain spots. But I think anybody that says that this county needs 98 take home vehicles, I think we need to take a look at that. That's our job.
Don't misconstrue me. I meant no disrespect.
No, right back at you.
I'm just saying that I know that Busick policy.
Yep.
That model kind of one fits all. I think we definitely have some special.
No, needs. Every department's different. Every person inside a department is different.
We have a fleet manager assigned that works very well with Kim. We worked with Kim for years on the other side of the fleet. And
you have a fleet manager?
We for our internal, yes, sir.
Is his title fleet manager?
No, he's not. He's a lieutenant, but he's got the duty.
Different.
Okay.
I'd like to ask you. You're next. Oh man. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Legislator Litz, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I agree with Legislator Nolan. We need a track committee. We're making decisions without the appropriate committee. We have a charter revision committee that just met and gave us a bunch of recommendations on changing the charter. We have a compensation committee that reviews compensation of all our employees and makes recommendations. This is just another committee to look at a policy and update it. And I understand we could all sit around the table and do it. We have, I don't know, we're talking about postponing this meeting because we've got another 12, 14 resolutions to do. I don't know when we would go through and do this policy review. And it's going to take more than a few hours or a few weeks or maybe even a couple of months. This is just the committee to review a policy that's outdated.
Excuse me. And if I could, I understand emergency responders, and I think, you know, the sheriff should have a car. Other members of the organization, I mean, the patrol cars run 24/7. My neighbor is a fire chief. He brings that vehicle home because they get called out, you know, and the first thing they want to do is not stop off and hop into an engine, but get to the scene first. But I've also been shown pictures of department heads driving brand new, you know, sports package, is that what you call them, with tinted windows, when an employee is driving a 1990-something vehicle with holes in the floors. So that's concerning. And so I really think we need to take another look at this. Plus, I believe Public Works, you're the only department that actually issues the fringe benefit on the W-2. I'm not hearing that the other departments are doing that. There's just a lot of questions, and we're not targeting anyone. But,
So, Madam Chair, I'd also like, you know, if this goes to, you know, your fact-finding and you want to have the committee, I mean, we'd be glad to participate. We understand that policy doesn't really fit, needs to be updated, and there's certainly different uses throughout the county, but on the plus side, we're taking cars that used to have to be replaced in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That extend that we were using a 2011 that's still on the road and is still in service because it's assigned to one person that's operated it versus multiple.
And I like to see, I mean, I had deputy down the street from us, that was nice, and we had a trooper, so it makes it look like you're watching the neighborhood. Legislator Nolan and Deputy LaValle.
This county is a very large county, and out in my district, which is 23 miles down the road, it can be very helpful to have somebody have that vehicle there. And so I think there are extenuating circumstances that explain what has developed. I don't feel like we have heard properly from our fleet manager. I'd like to hear, from our fleet manager. I'd like to hear from the sheriff's office fleet manager. And I do think that Public Works is the right committee to just bring that information. The idea that there's a problem to be fixed is just so far an idea. I think that maybe it's based on some observations, and we can question those observations and get some information. But to form this committee says that there's a problem. I am not convinced there is. I would like to hear from all of the available people speaking to us here before we say, there are people here that are saying there isn't a policy. Let's at least ask all the departments what policy they're following and collect those all. That would be like a first step for what this committee would even work on. That hasn't been done yet. To me, it's just respectful to ask what's actually happening and get that information first before we decide there's a problem. Because if we indicate that there's a problem and there isn't, then we've created a problem. And I don't like to create problems. I'd rather solve them.
Mm-hmm. Legislator, Deputy LaValle.
I just want to reiterate that this is something very much that Kim and I have discussed. We've discussed it with the county executive. We will be working on updating that policy. We were talking today about how to incorporate reporting in the Green Fleet Report so that information is provided annually to the legislature, and making sure that there's not only the policy and the procedures in place, but that there's a continual reporting mechanism that's rolled into a report that's pretty robust, actually very robust, that the legislature already receives on the fleet. And I don't know, Kim, I know you have a lot to...
Liz, did you have a question? And then I'd like to call the vote. Okay, Legislator Liz.
Okay. How many people in the room think the Charlie Buzik policy is outdated?
How many people know him? That's the first question.
Oh, I just saw him. is outdated and needs to be updated?
Everybody.
Show of hands.
It's not operative policy right now.
What?
I'm not familiar.
It's the only thing we have is a policy.
That's not our understanding.
No, hang on a second. I don't dictate to the county executive how to run the day-to-day operations of this county.
You don't.
And the branch that sets policy for this county is the legislative branch. Therefore, the only policy that exists right now is the Charlie Buzik policy that was written when?
2007.
2007. I think it's outdated. I think we need to update it. And I understand that any committee that is going to update a policy that's going to affect departments in this county, just like our budget process, they come in, you sit down, you talk to them, you go through it. How many vehicles you got? How many of this? How many of that? How many are you going to update? How old are they? What's your replacement schedule? And you're going to do that with every department. And eventually, that's all going to come together, and we're going to come up with a new policy. I don't think this committee has the time, the wherewithal, to do all of that work. Just like we don't sit down and make recommendations on charter revisions or to compensate each employee in the county. Somebody else studies that. Somebody else does that. The track committee, the trail committee bring recommendations to us. That's what needs to be done. I mean, that's how we operate. That's standard operating procedure. A policy needs to be revised. We typically take it on as a job if it's something we can do. This you got to look at. How many vehicles are in the county? 498. How many departments use vehicles in this county?
27 different departments.
Okay. Even if we took a couple of departments at a meeting, you're talking months. And then to go through all of that analysis and do everything, I think we need a subcommittee for that. And you can call it whatever you want to call it, whether it's a subcommittee of DPW or whomever, to update a policy. I think that's what needs to happen. I don't see this committee, with the amount of work we have to do, we can't even get through our agenda, has the time to do all of what she said needs to be done. And no disrespect, it's not the county executive's job.
It's not. Legislator Erner, and then our fleet manager, and I really think we should call the question.
Thank you. I support forming this committee. Legislator Maloney and I had talked beforehand, and I just wanted to clarify that this says we would make the appointments 30 days from the passage, but we're approaching the end of a legislative term, so that would, under this, either mean that legislators would be appointed who might not, I guess we'll know the results of the election 30 days after this passes, but we should, I'd like to just, for the record, clarify how that would work.
So they'll stay on, just like the RRA Reform Commission, and I did hear that I think the chair might appoint herself to that, which means she'll carry on, which is, I think, the way to do it. So, Phil, if you end up being appointed by this committee, you will stay on and serve on that, on the committee for the first couple of months of next year. And I think you bring your institutional knowledge with you, just like Tracy will bring her institutional knowledge with her as we bring in eight or nine freshman legislators, whatever it turns out to be. And so that is fine. If it turns out to be somebody that is here, they're here. If they're not, they're still here. It's written in as a resolve that you will serve out to the length of this this short committee.
Thank you.
Did you say it was the fleet manager? Yeah, okay.
On behalf of her?
If she has something to say, but I also do, but she may. We have a fleet manager that is something that didn't exist, you know, prior to the charter. Mm-hmm. There's been a professionalization in a lot of places across the board of the operations. The fleet manager position was created and this is information that we can gather and bring, and this is why it's important to bring this all together, and this is why you have professional staff to do this. I would also like to point out that the resolution does state that certain information, and I would like to hear from the sheriff's office on this, that is considered, there's certain information that the resolution calls to be provided to the committee that I know in meeting with Sheriff Figueroa, he feels that it's very sensitive regarding who, which vehicles, etc. I think even including license plates of those vehicles, unmarked cars that are used in investigations will be provided to the committee. That is all in the resolution explicitly as information that would be provided to the committee.
Nothing that we wouldn't ask for anything. I've already told you that. No way.
There are other departments besides the sheriff's office, including social services and also the DA's office, that have unmarked vehicles that are used for investigation, that this resolution would require divulging all the information, including who takes it home, to the committee public forum.
We won't need to pull any of that. You can tell us. We won't need to pull any of that.
It's not what the resolution says.
That's fine. You hold back information all the time. We won't be getting any of that. This is just more tidbits to stop us from doing something.
I would like to call a vote on this. By a show of hands, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
What was the tally?
3-1.
3-1.
I put my agenda away, didn't I? Where did I put my agenda?
Where are you going? Early quit?
I was going to check out the planning board.
Oh. You going to report back on that?
I'll call you.
Did Joe take it by
accident? You have another one?
Probably would, too. What are we doing?
We have a... Oh, here, I found it. I stuck my agenda and tucked it away.
Oh, okay.
We have resolutions that have not gone through Ways and Means. Typically, and I spoke to the sponsors of the Government Operations Center.
Everybody can really quit.
Yeah.
I'm going to make you all legislators and make you actually work here.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam.
Take care, guys. Be safe.
So, 19 and 20, I would like to recommend we take no action on.
That's resolution number 309.
Resolution number 309 and 364.
309, 364.
364.
I abstain.
You have to abstain from those? Okay.
Yeah.
If we're taking no action, you don't have to abstain. I agree with taking no action.
Then I'll take no action.
If we put off the rest of the meeting, there's only going to be three people present. Legislator Fabiano has ongoing family obligations that he hasn't been able to make this meeting, and I think one of a couple of previous ones. These nine resolutions, one of them is Elizabeth Manor, so resolution number 468. We'll take no action on that one as well.
468.
Okay.
That's the one amending the capital project. We are still waiting. I believe that the RFP has gone out. We did because I just got a copy of it. So I'm sure there won't be an issue holding on that. So we have resolutions from Legislator Erner.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll start going through those. I mean, I'm not doing anything. We can always try to order a pizza if you're hungry. But okay. Resolution number 425, establishing a policy to liberalize access to public spaces for survival. Motion to discuss.
I can't find that one. Where is it?
That's on the very last page. It's number 21.
I will move it.
Oh, it's, yeah. Okay. That must have just got added.
We've had this for a couple of...
Well, so if I can...
No, I mean what I printed out doesn't include it. But
okay.
I added it on the bottom because I compared it to this.
Yes. And 425 and 433 and 552, the Committee of Original Jurisdiction, have not met yet. That is why you are seeing them for the first time. They were postponed previously.
But I feel like I've seen this. This has been before.
Because you sit on the Health Committee.
Okay.
And the Health Committee meets tomorrow. Or next week.
No, it's
next week.
Monday.
Monday, sorry.
Okay. So do we have any?
I'll move to discuss 425.
Okay. I think we already have it. Can we have a second on that?
Now I'm looking for it again. Sorry.
I had to resend the agenda.
I have the earlier one.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. That's okay. I could just look at yours.
I was in today, so.
To liberalize. Oh, okay. Yes, I. Yes. Okay.
Are you on the Health Committee as
the
well?
The Health Committee
I am,
is
so
the original
there.
Jurisdiction of that resolution.
But I was working
I
on
apologize.
The older resolution. No problem.
I'll
second this.
Was this in... This was not in the packet you sent the other day, so I haven't read this one.
I think that might be Susan Ockham's.
I think I had... I sent an updated version.
Today?
Yes. In the OneDrive has it, but I apologize.
The OneDrive is very elusive for me.
Yeah. So do you want to take no action on this, or do you want to... open it for discussion?
I remember having discussion on this, and I forget what committee it was in.
I think we've all seen it, haven't we?
Did you talk about it in caucus?
We talked about it.
I don't know if it was in caucus.
But there was a lot of issues about insurance and safety and having public buildings open beyond their normal hours that would require maybe the sheriff's department to be there or something. I don't know what buildings we could open up to the public. I don't know. I was trying to think about a building that we could actually do this for, and I couldn't come up with one.
So, I appreciate the intent of this, and I know individuals who would be very happy if we could make it possible for them to sleep at the fairgrounds, for example, or if there were some indoor space that they could have access to that we haven't thought of yet. So I understand that there's a desire and perhaps even a need of some individuals who find it difficult to live in the spaces the county does make available, either congregate living or otherwise. What I would prefer to do than to issue a sweeping policy like this is to identify from the constituents what the closest thing to an actionable site is, and then put together just an informal team from, we have legislators on this committee. I would volunteer to work on this, and I think the Department of Health and Human Services would be necessary to work with us to see if we could open up a public space to this kind of use and evaluate it kind of as a pilot. And if that works, then I would be happy to go to the next one. And if we have multiple ones, then I would be very happy to have a policy that when we have spaces that fit these kind of criteria, that we make those available to the public. So I'm assuming that, in fact, people do have a right to these spaces, especially in county-owned property, but I don't think that this is the way to implement that right in a way that gives them the best that we can offer them. So that would be my proposal.
Legislator Litz.
Yeah, I mean...
And then Legislator...
I'm not against this. I actually like this. But to take an existing county building that are offices or workspaces or whatever and implement this, I think would be very difficult to do. Other cities, mostly cities, but maybe some counties in other places in the world, have taken a piece of county property or state property or whatever it is that's vacant and put in these little tiny houses and had people that need housing actually give them a tiny house. They're not huge. They're like 12 by 8 or something. But it's enough for a bed, enough to get out of the weather, enough to have some heat, enough to help them survive. I would much rather see the county go in that direction. Because I think that the issue with this particular resolution is even the county fairgrounds are locked. The gates are closed, they're padlocked because they get vandalism. Mm-hmm. To open that up where people could go in and stay or whatever, I think, and it's probably not the people that would be living there or because they would be grateful. But it's going to be the other people that try to break in all the time and rip off stuff that's there because you couldn't bring the people in and relock the gates. I mean, you don't do that. It's not safe. I would much rather see the county take property somewhere that we own, and we own property in a lot of places. And I know we're trying to do that with, houses or whatever that are on up for foreclosure, but I think we can take that one step further. We could actually take a piece of land, maybe that's foreclosed, and put some tiny houses on it. And they're relatively, I'm not going to say, cheap, but they're relatively, And you could even get BOCES to build them. I mean, right now there's high schools and even BOCES, not in Port Huron, that build Habitat for Humanity houses.
The Bruderhof does it too.
I know. Yeah. I toured theirs.
Mm.
But that's a house for somebody to buy, and it's big, and it's 3 bedroom, and it's all of that. They could put together these other ones, you know, like in literally a couple of days instead of 2 months. And you could populate those. And then they have their own space. It's lockable. They're safe. They would have amenities, you know, a toilet or whatever, so we put in a little sewer system and a water system or something. But for relatively a small amount of county investment, you could house a lot of people
mm-hmm.
and get them off the streets. And you know, it's the right thing to do. I would much rather see us adopt a policy for that than opening up the buildings because we can't guarantee safety. And you don't want a sheriff. You don't want the sheriff having to hire 25 more people and put one in each building that we have people staying in. And then what happens when a motor vehicle opens up the doors in the morning? You're gonna have to tell those people, hey, go, because you know we can't have you hanging out here. We've got people coming in. I'd much rather have them. And you know, some. I think it gives them more dignity to have their own place. You know. It's something that they can, you know, get a leg up on. Anyway, that's my piece.
Legislator Nolly?
So I would request that the sponsor either withdraw or...
All right, I think we should vote. I'm kind of firmly believe that we've been carrying too many things forward.
Well, I would prefer that the legislator consider withdrawing. If the legislature does not, then I guess we can vote. Especially if there's no sense that there would be changes in this. I haven't seen the packet on this one, but I assume there's no changes. So, where do you want to go with it, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate all the feedback here, and I feel heartened that we will do more than we've been doing in this county government based on the discussion I'm hearing. My most recent conversation with the administration was today with S.E. Lewis, and you know, I've had conversations on both ends of the halls about trailers. So to Legislator Nolan's point about what are people asking for, what kind of accommodation, that's one. So like to Legislator Litz's point about tiny houses, people have talked about that sort of thing, like a camper mm-hmm. trailer. People who are currently living in a motel or getting evicted are like, can you help me find, like they're looking up campers that they could buy, or is there a fund to get campers? Mm-hmm. The city of Kingston, for example, and that I'm more familiar with, there had been proposals to put up tiny houses, like a fairly large number of them in Midtown, and then it turned into a smaller number, which haven't been built yet, but that concept certainly has been explored. I know a former deputy executive Ryder talked with me about pallet shelters. And then, you know, the reason for the buildings, and I understand the concerns there, I'm besides the immediate housing need, I'm thinking about what facilities might exist that people could do other necessities, like and take a shower, cook some food, maybe store some food, maybe store some possessions. I know that more storage is opening up around the county, but until recently, most of the storage units were pretty full. I hear that this resolution as is doesn't have support. I don't want to withdraw it because I want to continue the conversation and see if we can come up with an actual plan to move forward. If the committee was willing to postpone, I mean, that brings us to December, I can continue the conversations and try and come up with something that could pass at the end of the year. But if folks don't want them, so I guess.
I'd make a motion to postpone.
Okay.
Do we have a second?
Yep.
On the motion?
Aye.
I'm going to say no. I really think we should start moving forward. I keep getting hit with jokes now about how this legislator postpones everything and doesn't seem to get much done. And this is from directors of other departments. So I'll be no on the postponement.
In relation to that, I would just say that we have several legislators that have brought forward resolutions as a way of starting conversations.
Yeah.
And that isn't necessarily my favorite way,
mm-hmm.
but if that's the way that works to get some of these conversations happening, and the sense I had from the comments was that there will be some changes and we'll continue talking about it.
Okay. So this resolution will be changed next month, so there will be amendments made.
That's what I would be anticipating.
Okay. Resolution number 433, urging the government of the state of New York and the United States of America to establish fossil fuel-free state and federal public transportation services. Motion for discussion.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Okay.
I'd like to make a motion that we postpone.
Second.
On the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. So these are all going to be on next month's agenda then?
Yep, because you said you couldn't schedule another meeting where you could get more than three people.
Well, I don't know. Do you want to throw some dates out there? I mean, I'm not available until after our next session.
I know we postponed this, but there was a couple things that I had thought about.
Please, I'd like to hear it.
No, if the federal government and the state government start their own public transit, we probably will not get any funding for UCAT. UCAT will probably be defunded. And the problem with that is then we're held captive as to where the federal government and the state government want to go. I know you want fixed routes to here and you want to expand this and expand that, but when they take over and UCAT's not here anymore, they're going to direct it and it takes it away from us. At least now we're having discussions about UCAT expanding and different things, but if we lose our federal funding, UCAT will go away because the federal government funds 80% of our UCAT budget, and if they take that money away, it'll cease to. There's no way we could run that, not without federal funding.
Could we amend this to ask them not to do that?
Well, I mean, at best, this is a memorializing resolution.
Yeah.
And I don't know, we haven't seemed to had too much luck with the federal or state government with our memorializing resolutions. They seem to want to do what they want to do. But
one of the reasons that I suggested a postponement or made the motion for a postponement is that I'd like to have the opportunity to talk with the sponsor about ways that we could maybe craft a more targeted one resolution for state and one for federal and really specify what we want. So I think there is a chance to improve this, but I'd rather not try to craft it, you know, during the committee at 9:30.
At the end of the day, it's still just going to be a memorializing resolution.
That's true, but we put ourselves... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, to that point, so I actually had forgotten that this was still out there, and I really ought to withdraw this because I had inserted the language from this into Resolution 464, and... because I believe that we should act while also asking others to act. And I know that's a different format from a memorializing resolution, but you'll see in maybe the very next resolution that this language is in there.
So we voted to postpone. I think I just signed that, didn't I?
No.
You didn't sign
no,
it.
Question is up and call.
You want to withdraw it instead? I'll withdraw my motion to postpone.
Okay.
This language is in the other resolution.
This language is in there. And Yeah, and I want to recognize Legislator Green had signed on as a sponsor originally of this when it was the original version with fossil fuel free. I understood that the support wouldn't be there for the larger legislature to have that language. But with all of that, yes, let's withdraw this.
I withdraw my motion.
Thank you.
Do you withdraw your second? Legislator Green,
does it
two seconds?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Resolution number 464, establishing a public transportation level of service policy.
I'll move it.
Second.
Thank you.
I make a motion to postpone.
Second. Second.
Well, if we're going to have some discussion.
Want discussion before
the motion? Discussion before the motion? Fair,
okay.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Okay.
There's several of these that are coming up, and it's going to sound like a broken record, but I really need to have the TBD removed and something put there as far as what financially this is going to cost the county. Because some of these resolutions, it's not 10, 20, not even $50 million. It could be hundreds of millions of dollars. And I don't know where we would come up with that kind of money when our total budget is $413 million. To create a policy that's going to cost $200 million is like, oh my God, where are we going? How are we going to do that? So, I mean, boy, I'll tell you, if you can put some dollar values in there that make sense, I'm with you.
I appreciate that, and I wish we had more time this month because I did send the administration a recommended trials, I'll call it. That's what this email is that everyone on the committee should have.
Yep.
You want one for the clerk?
Yeah.
I've got it.
Maybe
email.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you.
Sure. So the email that's here in sort of gray. This is what I'm. I apologize that I have not been able to meet. That I have not yet met with our staff to go over as best we can a financial impact here. I'm hoping that the administration can also work on this sort of pared down list of priorities and come up with a ballpark, or ideally the impact, but you know, at least a ballpark, to your point, Legislator Litz, and
order of magnitude would be fine.
Yeah, exactly. And here, so other than that, the separate version of 464 you have here, if you look at the last page, Exhibit A, that's the individual policies that would have the financial impact and constitute the service expansions. And then what remains in the body of the resolution are the whereases, the resolve that direct the different departments to how to implement it, and then the content of the now withdrawn resolution 433. So I see the reason I put 433 in here is I see it as a unified approach to addressing the problem of transportation, passenger transportation in Ulster County. And I agree with Legislator Litz, like we can't, you know, we run that risk. At the same time, we know we can't do it alone. Like I was speaking with Senator Hinchey a couple weeks ago, and she has a proposal to create an authority for our region that would encompass at least Orange, Dutchess, Ulster counties. I can't remember if she included some others. I mean, she doesn't represent part of Ulster, Orange County as far as I know, but in any case, something like what they have for MTA to the south and CDTA to the north. Now, that's an approach. One reason she said that could be useful is for funding streams and for crossing bridges, which we can't do without permission, and going out of county. I don't know if that's the right approach, but just conversations I'm having, other levels of government who are thinking about this. So that's kind of the lay of the land here, and I would love to be able to discuss this again before December, but we might not be able to do that. So since it is a policy, not a law, we could conceivably adopt something in December, just straight up.
So
you made a motion, right?
Yeah. So I'd like.
Did we get a second on that?
You had discussion. Oh. I think.
But I do have a question. So will we be bringing the same resolution in, or another resolution?
Well,
and will there be substantial changes?
Well, this resolution in front of us with Exhibit A separated out is different than what we've seen before, and so I would make a motion to postpone just because I haven't had a chance to look at this version. But I also would welcome the chance to talk with the sponsor about some changes in language. We did have a conversation earlier today, and I think that some of these as goals rather than as shall ensure that are potentially things that I could support. And so I think that there's helpful work being done. So I'm happy to postpone and continue that work. And I'm not sure that we would pass this in December, but perhaps there will be a version that could get support.
So on the motion to postpone, do I hear a second? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Are you opposed?
I just had a comment.
No, that's okay. Deputy,
I thought it was further discussion.
It is discussion. I apologize. It's just that typically we see things that direct the executive to then direct departments and titles to do certain work items, and this directly directs
the department,
tourism, the head of public transportation, UCAT, to do things. And typically that's not how we
I could respond
to
that.
Yes, thank you.
So the tourism part, I haven't checked the charter. The charter specifically authorizes the legislature to direct the Department of Public Transportation apart from the executive.
Didn't know that.
It's one of the few departments, yeah.
I'd like to make a motion to reconsider because I would like to offer the policy that was presented here tonight as an amended version so that that's clean when we see it next time.
I withdraw my motion to postpone and make a motion that we replace the existing 464 with the distributed 464. Is that sufficient for the motion?
I'll rectify it.
Second.
Okay. And then we make a motion to postpone that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So on the motion... Okay. Do you need that re...
Well, you didn't call a question in favor of amending as presented.
Okay.
So making the motion to amend as presented.
You have it, though, as
presented. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I have,
all right.
I have the...
So on the motion amending as presented, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions. Thank you.
I make a motion we postpone.
Okay. Second.
The amended resolution.
Okay.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Thank your
you.
Votes are the same.
I don't even have to resign it.
You don't have to resign it. And 468, that is postponed. Resolution number 551, setting a public.
468 was no action.
No action. Thank you. Resolution number 551, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 11 of local. A local law providing the protection of vulnerable road users' Bill of Rights at trail crossings to be held on Wednesday, December 6th.
I'd like to suggest that we take no action. I have been in contact with the New York State Senate chair of the Transportation Committee and want to organize a meeting. They are willing. They've offered us a date that Legislator Erner and myself and possibly some others would have about the enactment at the state level of what's called the Idaho Stop policy. If we did get that to move forward at the state level, it would not be really compatible with this law, because this law calls for a different type of interaction at intersections. So I believe
what is the Idaho Stop?
So the Idaho Stop is called that because in Idaho,
group of cyclists encouraged a change where at intersections, cyclists be allowed not to stop and walk their bicycles across, but to proceed across the intersection without stopping and dismounting. And strangely enough, that is associated in Idaho and more than two dozen other states with vastly decreased in, crashes at intersections of bicycles and
cars.
Even
though they're running a stop sign.
Because the cyclist keeps up a little bit of momentum, and they get to look into the intersection and see if a car is coming. So they basically can either, they can escape better, I think, is what is happening. That's my informal way of explaining this data. But the data is very clear. And so there is a bill in New York State that has passed the Assembly. Strangely enough, the Senate has not passed it. Usually it's the other way around. But it hasn't gotten out of the Transportation Committee in the Senate. So we want to go and talk to them and find out why. So this resolution, I think we should keep it in case, you know, we don't get any progress on the New York State law. I can provide those bill numbers for the record at a later point. I didn't bring them with me. But I think it would be reasonable just to take no action on this at this point.
Legislator Erner and Legislator Litz.
I can go after Legislator Litz.
No, that's fine. The wording of this current resolution is in violation of the current state highway law.
Oh, right.
And it's also in violation of the federal MUTC and the state MUTC.
Manual of Uniform
Traffic Control
Codes.
Devices. Traffic Control Devices. So,
yeah,
there would have to be, you know, some sort of discussion with the state to change the current state highway law in order for us to be able to pass this, because we cannot pass a law that's in violation of a current state law.
Even though this is just for trail crossings, and generally there's not a light at a trail crossing.
Has nothing to do with a light.
Has nothing to do with that, okay.
It states that the cyclist has the right of way and does not have to stop. That's in violation of state highway law, and it's in violation of the MUTCD, both state and federal. So changes to those would have to happen for us to enact this law without being in illegal.
Mm-hmm. Legislator Erner.
Yes, and I've come to understand that based on what Legislator Litz has been saying, and our council agrees that basically A through C in Section 4 don't work. But we could direct the county to install traffic control devices pursuant to state vehicle and traffic law, mm-hmm. is what Councilor Ragucci told me. Now, mm-hmm. what I'm thinking is if that's all that comes out of this, then you don't really need a law, that's just a policy. And mm-hmm. where this comes from, just in case I hadn't said so before, is advocates for the community of vulnerable road users who want us to make the streets safer for people who are outside of cars, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think ideally, this probably won't happen in the next month or two, but next legislative session, the legislature will hopefully take on that work. Maybe I can support from the outside in developing a policy that can support safety for vulnerable road users more comprehensively than this does in this form. And I also appreciate Legislator Nolan's efforts to advocate for the Idaho Stop. I'm familiar with the data on it, and both at red lights and stop signs, you would be changing the state law so that it's not technically running the sign or the light anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so thanks. I'm happy to have no action on this tonight.
Okay. Resolution number 552, establishing a policy to replace conventional toilets with composting toilets at county facilities. Motion for discussion.
I'll move it.
Second.
Discussion before
Yeah.
Any further motions?
Yeah, today I went down to the Kingston Wastewater Treatment Plant, which handles the water for the city and part of town of Esopus, Port Ewan, to see where the waste from this building and many other county facilities winds up and how it's handled. And I understand from that, it's quite a marvel. It was my first time there. I could have spent, you know, the whole week there.
It's a cool process, yeah.
From the discussion that I've heard in committee and with administrators and the public, I think there might be support for starting to do this at outdoor facilities, that trails and so forth, especially away from water and sewer.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much in existing buildings mm-hmm. where we have plumbing or we're in the city and I get that. That makes sense. Part of the reason I brought this up to Legislator Nolan's point earlier is to have a conversation about how we handle the waste going in the toilets and whether we could do it in a more ecological and closed loop way. But I did learn down at the wastewater treatment that they make essentially compost material there. It used to be available to the public here, but there was issues with that a bit ago, so now we ship it down to Rockland County, and there's an arrangement with the RRA, but I guess that's where it ends up. It goes mm-hmm. in a container and goes down there, and that's how we handle it.
Legislator,
there's other parts, obviously. There's other pieces to the stream, like the water gets sent into the Rondout, and it has to be tested very thoroughly. But anyway, others know a lot more than I do, so I'll shut up.
Yeah, Legislator Nolan and then Legislator Green.
So for lots of reasons, this area of waste management has been something that I've worked on quite a bit, because most developments that come in have issues with their waste management. The building closes at 10. Okay, take note. Also, we have, you know, a watershed where handling of waste is really looked at very carefully in regard to water quality. So I've used compost toilets, and I strongly support using them in outdoor places where mm-hmm. there's not running water. But I also appreciate this resolution because I believe that although the county doesn't run any waste management facilities as far as I'm aware, I believe we should try to do something to encourage municipalities that do to move away from conventional waste treatment to reed bed and closed system approaches, which conventional systems basically only remove bacteria. But reed bed and closed loop systems, organic systems, can remove bacteria, viruses, pharmaceuticals, heavy metals and hormones.
Mm-hmm.
And hormones are very prevalent in our, especially from people who eat meat, in our waste stream. So, who eat animals who have consumed those hormones. Forced to consume those hormones. Not you, because you raise your animals without mm-hmm. hormones. But, so I think we should refocus this onto the outdoor facilities, really mm-hmm. narrow down and where we would be starting with this, and look at ways that the county might help municipalities investigate more closed-loop systems that I think would produce better quality compost at the end if they produce anything that has to go off-site.
Legislator Green?
I just want to second what Legislator Nolan just offered and mentioned that town of Highlands has
Town of Lloyd had a Phragmites field.
Yes, Zumptable, the business in Highland, has a closed loop system, and Omega Center over in Rhinebeck has a very mm-hmm. large one that mm-hmm. handles their whole facility. So there are local examples.
Mm-hmm. I tried to get that into the Williams Lake project in Rosendale. Didn't succeed. But I have a sort of point of order question. If I'm not mistaken, wasn't this defeated in energy and environment?
I don't remember that.
No? Okay. My memory doesn't serve me well. Had it been, does it still go to another committee?
We are seeing this today because we are meeting before Energy and Environment. You're meeting tomorrow.
Oh. So this is on your agenda tomorrow?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So even no matter what we do here tonight, you will still see it on your agenda tomorrow.
Got it.
I mean,
because you're the
I
committee of original jurisdiction.
I think there had been some discussion, but it was not. Okay. That was all I had.
And I would be comfortable with this.
I had one thing on new business when you get there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If it was outdoors only, especially with the new, there's a new park and recreation department that's being proposed. So, yeah, I think,
Is there a motion to postpone in the anticipation of a revised
major amendments?
Back to
yeah, for outdoor. Thank you. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay.
I'd like to move to block the last three resolutions.
All right.
Second on the motion?
Okay. Okay. All in favor of the block?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. On the block, a motion?
To discuss.
To discuss?
I'll move them.
Second.
Okay.
May I?
Absolutely.
Thank you. So, I'm hoping to actually incorporate the intent here into the 464, but basically, can the administration, I did send some questions about these three resolutions in addition to 464. My main question here, I'll ask our staff if needed, but there's questions in there, and I think you might have some information that could help us determine a cost to this.
With the rescheduling.
To all three.
With the rescheduling of this meeting, these are new questions, legislator?
These are the questions that I sent Friday by email.
Okay. So with the rescheduling of this meeting and the director of UCAT is out of town at a conference, we have not had time to speak about them. So I don't know if I can really offer any information for discussion.
Okay. But what about for next month?
Next month, yes.
Okay.
I'll make a motion. We postpone.
Second. All in favor?
Fine, hold on.
I'm sorry. Legislator Earnhardt?
Yeah. Thank you. So I just wanted to give, I just wanted to thank UCAT. The communication, I'm pleased with the website changes that I've been seeing.
Mm-hmm.
The live map now where you can follow, track the bus for all the routes is there just like it had been on the app. I'm not sure if the percentage full is functioning because I always see it 0%. That might be true, but that's great. The routes being not PDF anymore, that's great. That means more people can read them in various ways and languages. And then let me see if there's anything else I wanted to say. No, I'll just leave it on that positive note.
And I'm hoping it doesn't say zero full. I mean, we're still counting off how many passengers we have, so we get reimbursed by the federal. Okay. All right. So on the motion to postpone, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Legislator Green, you said you had something?
I want to make the committee aware because there's some overlap between the focus here and energy. We're hopefully going to propose a renewable energy implementation task force that is to bring people that are extremely knowledgeable about renewable energy and have Ulster County be a pilot to model achieving 70% renewable. Okay, 70% by 2030
Thanks, we're all having dinner. No, never mind. Only kidding.
I was going to text you. I'm sorry.
We're interrupting the legislature.
Yeah.
So just bear that in mind with some of the energy and transportation that we're going to try to pull together the people that know. We have a lot of energy experts floating around that are willing to take that on if we decide to create a task force to do that. And I just, it overlaps a lot, so
okay.
I wanted to.
Very good. And transportation is a big part of climate change.
Yeah.
So.
Transportation and other energy infrastructure and efficiency, et cetera. So, but the focus will actually be on renewable energy generation. FYI. Thank you.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
If there's no other business before the
committee. If there's no other business, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
10 minutes to ten.
Ten to ten. This was, yeah, Michael's
epic.
Never coming back.
No, epic is 2 a.m.
Oh, have you? Okay. But don't they boot us out because of security? I thought they closed the meeting.
Different
that's a
meeting, different place.
Oh, okay.
I'll do security.
When I was secretary for the Resource Recovery Agency, we'd go all-nighters, too, and they'd have security there.
And by the way, at 2 a.m., we postponed.